Good afternoon. The Conference Committee of House File 4162 and Senate File 3781 will come to order. And, you know, Senator Cohen, it's good to have you back here again. Senator, it's good to see you. You know, I was thinking about this conference committee today. I was thinking about the opening of fishing, and I envisioned we could rent a big pontoon and go up to the governor's fishing opener and have a table down the middle of the pontoon. We could have the five senators on one side, the five House members on the other side, staff members kind of along the railing. They could be trolling along, and then I imagine that the lobbyists like sharks would be zipping along in their boats next to us trying to overhear what was going on. But then I realized we actually aren't at the fishing opener today. That's tomorrow. So we can't do that today. It's Senator Cohen's call for tomorrow. If we're going to do that, it'll be up to Senator Cohen. So we'll have to talk about that later. But thank you for being here, everyone. This is the Supplemental Budget Conference Committee. I'm Representative Jim Knobloch, Chair of the Ways and Means Committee in the Minnesota House. And if I can, I'll have each of the House members introduce themselves. Then we'll have staff introduce themselves. Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair, Dennis Osmond, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee in the House, and very much a pleasure to be here, Mr. Chair.
And I'm Representative Fran Bradley from Rochester, Chair of the Health, Finance, and Policy, and I'm looking forward to this helping my re-election campaign.
He's not right.
Representative Seifert.
Representative Marty Seifert, Chair of State Government Finance, and I'm the most junior member of the conference committee elected only 10 years ago.
Representative Lauren Solberg, District 3B, lead one on the Ways and Means Committee, lead DFLer, and I'm trying to make sure that this conference committee doesn't cost me an election.
And I guess if I can start with staff to my right, Mr. Marks, and then go down the table.
Bill Marks, House Fiscal Staff.
Kevin Matzik, Committee Administrator with the Ways and Means Committee.
Kathy Novak, House Research Department.
Shirley Catterick, CLA for the Ways and Means Committee.
Sean Ron, DFL Research.
Senator Cohen.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, like yourself, hoping we can work through this. I will mention a couple hours ago, two and a half hours ago, Senator Johnson and I had a very pleasant conversation with the governor about the budget issues, segued a little bit into some of the tax issues and brought Senator Pogemiller in. But it was quite conciliatory and helpful toward trying to resolve things, although based on our conversation with the governor, we would not want to be fishing with him this weekend. It didn't sound like it was the most pleasant weather up there. So we're looking forward to working hard. Obviously, we recognize the deadline of adjournment coming up upon us in this next week, but I'm optimistic with the crowd of people we have here, the representatives and senators, that it's an experienced group that will be able to work through things in an equitable way and reach some resolution that will be of benefit to everybody in the state. And so I appreciate the chance to come over here. I guess I'll do the same and ask the senators to introduce themselves. We'll start with Senator Berglund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think most people here know me.
Denny Fredrickson, State Senator from District 21. My home is Noel, and the other larger city in my district is Marshall. And Mr. Chairman, to your vision of having us meet on a pontoon and fishing, and then leaving it up to Senator Cohen where we would meet at our next meeting, probably would not be in a fishing boat, but I know our chairman would probably be someplace like the Guthrie.
Well, that's probably true, Senator Frederick.
Which would also be very enjoyable.
I'm Senator John Arnson from St. Peter. The neighbor, geographically, with Senator Fredrickson, and over my 16 years here, I've taken through two redistricts and pretty much most of Senator Fredrickson's district. I, like Representative Bradley, will be able to sit in some place between Mankato and Rochester with our feet up on a table and watch you folks campaign.
And, Mr. Chairman, I'll just mention that Senator Stump had some family matters, and obviously his district is some distance from the Capitol, and so he had to be home today. Senator Stump obviously chairs the K-12 Finance Division. And then in terms of staff, we'll start out with Mr. Mossman.
Matt Mossman, Senate Fiscal Staff.
Peter Watson, Senate Counsel.
Angela Maddy, Committee Administrator.
Jane Feldman, legislative assistant.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we had some discussion about beginning to go through the side-by-side that I believe led by Mr. Marks. Is that correct?
Well, I think what we're going to do for our opening of our meeting here is go through the side-by-sides and make sure that all House members and Senate members understand what is in House File 4162 and Senate File 3781. And I think as you start with the side-by-sides, I think we're going to start with the spreadsheet going to the second page, and I think we'll start with the education area since that comes up first. And being those are Senate positions in the beginning, I think maybe it makes sense to go to Mr. Mossman, and maybe Mr. Mossman, you can start walking us through the spreadsheet, and when we get to the health care area where there are House positions, we'll go over to Mr. Marks and start walking through the House side. Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair and members, starting on page 2, I'm sorry, it's actually listed as page 1 after the cover page of the spreadsheet. At the top of half of that page are the Senate's early childhood education provisions. In total, the Senate appropriated $23.4 million in fiscal 06-07 for various early childhood education provisions. Just quickly going through the individual line items. The first item is correction language to the early childhood screening program proposed by the governor and included in the House or in the Senate provision. The second item is to conform to some federal requirements for Part C eligibility proposed by the governor and also incorporated by the Senate. The third line is to provide.
Excuse me, Mr. Mossman, let me just interrupt you right there, and I certainly encourage House members, if they have questions on these Senate positions, to raise your hand and be recognized, or, of course, Senate members, too. Is that a federal requirement that we do that conformity, Mr. Mossman? Do you know?
Mr. Chair and members, yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Solberg.
Could the, as you're going through this, give us a page and line reference so that we understand where we're at on this, if you could, in the side by side. Are you on the spreadsheet? Okay. All right. I'm sorry.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Mossman.
Chair, continuing on the spreadsheet, then the third item down is a change in the adult basic education formula. It puts in an inflator. It increases the formula base and then puts an inflator on the formula in out years. The next item is to provide adult literacy grants. This is one-time funding in both fiscal 07 and fiscal 08 to provide $1.5 million of adult literacy grants for English, providing English education to refugees. The next item is to increase the formula for the early childhood and family education program to $120 per population, and this would put the formula back to the position that it was at, I believe, in 2003 before it was cut at that time. The next item is to provide a $1.5 million appropriation to the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation to provide do some quality rating assessment and put a system in place for rating the quality of programs. The next item down is kindergarten readiness assessment program, $258,000. Next item is to conduct a child care and Head Start study to evaluate the performance of those programs. The next item down is $75,000 for a new parent education program. Next is another study to provide $250,000 for a study of child care and school readiness.
I think we're off by a line.
Yep.
$250,000.
My apologies, yes. $250,000, $75,000was the school readiness study. And the next item is $250,000 appropriated to the LCC to perform and complete a commission, to set up a commission and complete a report on a commission to end poverty. Then on the next line is summarized. The Senate provides for $12.3 million for various child care programs. This is the basic sliding fee-related appropriations, and the individual items are summarized on page 3 of your spreadsheet, organized to compare to the House jurisdiction in that area. Members, turn to page 3. The first item is to make a change to the absent day policy for child cares, caring institutions, $477,000. The second item,
and Mr. Mossman, I mean, there is a House position there. Can you describe at all the difference between the Senate position and the House position? Maybe that, or we can get into the language on that later, too. I guess let's just note that there's a difference there, and we'll get into the difference later. Go ahead, Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair and members, then the following line is a change to the rate reimbursement for child caring institutions. This is the basic sliding fee cost of $6.3 million. The next item is to provide a 15% rate bonus to child caring institutions that receive accreditation. This is $609,000. The $3,000 on the line below that is for the Department of Human Services to administer that program. And the next line below that is to provide $1.6 million to reduce co-payments that parents pay for the basic sliding fee program. The next item below that is $631,000 to allow for half-day rates when children are not in child caring institutions for the full day. And the next item below that is to provide $2.7 million to the Department of Human Services to make an effort to reduce the waiting list for basic sliding fee program. Mr. Chair and members, I'd be back to page 1 then. The lower half of that page, the Senate provides for $34.9 million in total for education programs. All of this money would be administered by the Department of Education. The first item is to provide $250,000 as proposed by the governor to fund a pilot project for instruction and establishing programs for teaching Mandarin Chinese. The next item is $316,000 to buy out a Sika School District health and safety levy.
Mr. Mossman, do you know any more details about that particular issue? What exactly is that?
Mr. Chair, I do not. Our analyst, Eric Nauman, in that area may be more familiar with that.
Maybe I can have him come forward.
Mr. Chairman and members, Eric Nauman, Senate Fiscal. In, I believe, 1997 through 1999, there was an error in some calculations for the health and safety program. And what this error did was penalize all districts in the state if we were to allow it to self-correct. So this is an appropriation, and there's also some levy impact on this to add some additional money so that we're not penalizing all the other districts when we correct that levy.
What does this only affect Waseca then, or why is it listed as Waseca?
Mr. Chairman, it does. This particular provision only affects the Waseca School District.
Okay, so we decided to correct it for Waseca, but not other districts?
Mr. Chairman, there is no error for other school districts.
I see. Okay. All right, thank you. So it was only for Waseca that this error was made, Mr. Almanson?
Mr. Chairman, yes. And what we're talking about here, I mean, this is a governor's recommendation that the Senate adopted, and I think it's fairly straightforward.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Forbert.
Point of clarification, though, if we didn't do this, did you testify that other districts then would have to make this adjustment to be spread across the state?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think the way to think about this is that we used to have a fairly, before the 2003 legislative session, we had a much more robust aid program in health and safety. And in 2003, we ratcheted the aid back as part of the budget cutting that we did during that session, and the error which we just recently found out about occurred prior to that adjustment. So if you were to make this correction under the current formula without the language, what would happen is that you would, in a sense, stop up all the aid that we now have available statewide. I think it's the Education Committee on the Senate side felt that the governor's recommendation here was appropriate, that we didn't want to take up all the aid that's available for those other school districts, and we add this proposal to deal with the problem.
Thank you. Please proceed, Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair and members, the next two items are items that were proposed by the governor related to the QCOMP program that was put into place last year. It would make some adjustments to the timing of that program for participation and for the transition period for certain districts. The following item then is the significant in terms of dollars item in the Senate's provision, in the Senate's position, this is $32.2 million to provide one-time supplemental aid to school districts. The aid is computed essentially at $34.50 per pupil unit. The next item is to provide $50,000 for the Northwest Online College and High School program. The next item is $225,000 one time for a sign bridge and sign language program. The next two items are similar to provide emergency aid. The first line, $474,000 to the Red Lake School District, and the second line to provide $137,000 emergency aid to the Ricori School District. So the districts that recently had the high profile shootings in their school districts. The next item is to provide $495,000 in 07 one time, and then $1.008 million in 08 one time for a food storage and school lunch program. The next item is a study of special education financing in the state, $250 to the department to complete that study. The next item is to provide $450,000 in 07, and then there's another one-time appropriation in fiscal 08 to provide additional basic library grants. The next item is $20,000 to provide some rulemaking authority, to support rulemaking authority for the Department of Education.
And Mr. Nauman, is there some particular, I suppose we'll get to this in the language, but is there some particular new rule that is in the Senate language that is connected with this rulemaking?
Mr. Chairman, yes, there is. And if I can also jump back a couple of lines to offer a clarification, the food storage lunch and the basic library grants are permanent money, and I think they should be spread over the 2 years rather than one time in the tails.
Okay. Thank you. And what is the rule that's in question for the rulemaking? Do you recall offhand?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that it has to... Mr. Chairman, I think it's some American Indian language curriculum changes, but let me confirm that. I can report back to you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Mostyn?
Just two more lines, Mr. Chair and members. The next line after the rulemaking is to provide $25,000 for Scholars of Distinction project. And then the subsequent line after that is related to some information that came after the forecast that we identified that where there were some errors in the forecast. It may or may not be necessary to continue tracking this item as we go along, and that completes. I'm sorry, there is a tails item then, $14,000 for a health and safety testing and balancing provision.
All right. Mr. Marks, could I recognize you to start on page 2 with higher education spending?
Mr. Chair, the top one on page 2, the higher education funding, the first item is for the Rochester Higher Education Programs. House and Senate both have $5 million in fiscal year 2007, and then $5 million in 2008, $6 million, $330 in 2009 for that program, and the governor's recommendation was similar. The second line there, the state grant program. Senate makes some adjustments in the state grant program. This is actually, I believe, an increase of $100,000 and a decrease of $400,000 that net to the $300,000, and then similar adjustments in the tails. And then the third line, campus veterans assistance grants, the House has $100,000 here. And the note under the Senate to look at state government, the Senate has this integrated into some of the veterans items under the state government finance article.
All right.
Then, Mr. Chair, members, in the health article, the first item, the state-operated services shortfall for mentally ill and dangerous, the House recommendation of $31 million here is the same as the governor's. And the second item, the shortfall in the sex offender program, $33,674,000, also the same as the governor's. The third item, the state-operated services, the MEDO, or Minnesota Extended Treatment Program, the House appropriation is $1.5 million. That's a bit less than the governor's recommendation was there. The fourth item, state-operated services salary deficit, the House has $7.5 million. That's about $10 million less than the governor's recommendation. Next item is verification of immigration status and reporting. Is a cost savings item there of $2.374 million. Then the next item, rate increase for nursing facilities in Benton, Sherburn, and Stearns County in the St. Cloud area is $1,788,000. A rate increase for Meeker County day training and habitation, $30,000. Next item is an abortion reporting item of $116,000. Then for pandemic influenza preparedness, the House has $1 million here. Two items for the Veterans Home Board's operational shortfall. The House has $759,000 here. And then a quality assurance item under the Veterans Home Board's of $5,122,000. A final revenue item under the health ones, a transfer of the remaining revenue in the two tobacco endowments of $2.933 million. That would be a transfer into the general fund.
And Senator Cohen.
Chairman, Mr. Marks, if I could ask you, I'm sorry, maybe not Mr. Marks, but maybe Mr. Chairman. The governor had requested for DHS a salary supplement of $17 million, and I believe you recommended 7.5. Is that correct?
Oh, that's correct.
I wonder if you could just distinguish the governor's request versus what the House did with that. I don't know if that's yourself or Representative Bradley, but
I think I can speak to it. I guess our philosophy when we put together our bill was that many times, and you can see that we didn't give quite as much in the corrections area as the governor had requested either. Many times state agencies have been called upon to absorb the salary supplement entirely without any additional supplement. And we felt that that was not reasonable in this case, but that if you looked at the $28 million in total salary supplement that was needed underneath corrections, which is coming, the House provided $24.8 million, which was roughly 90%. If you look here at the total request from state-operated services, you've got the mentally ill and dangerous, you've got the sex offenders, you've got the salary supplement. Here we also provided roughly 90% if you added up all those three of what the administration was requesting. And I guess our view was that 90% would be a number that we felt at the time would be good enough.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, as we proceed, I'll probably be interested in maybe hearing a little bit more about that. In the Health and Human Services bill that we hope someday to pass, our figure was, you know, we weren't quite sure. We had heard some discussion from the administration, and Senator Berglund could speak this better than I could, but in promulgation of her division report, we just had some confusion, some concerns, and I just wondered, you know, if you could offer any, you know, so we had some of the same questions, and I just wondered if you had anything else to add relative to that.
Well, I guess the only thing I would say otherwise, Senator Cohen, is that these are obviously critical state mission areas that we need to be concerned about, and I'm certainly very open to listening to the administration and the department commissioners as to whether the numbers that we have in the House bill or other bills, the Senate bill, are adequate. And we want to make sure the number is adequate. And I guess we thought when we put together our numbers in the House that 90% would do it. But if we become convinced that 90% doesn't do the job, we're certainly open to funding more. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman. Was it your intention then with the state-operated services salary deficit that 10% would be absorbed by state-operated services?
Senator Berglund, well, if not state-operated services, that department.
But do you have anything in the bill that or you just didn't address that?
Senator Berglund, I don't recall offhand if we had anything in the bill directing it to come out of the Department of Human Services. I think that that would be something that the department would have authority to do if they saw the need to, based on my understanding of the law. But I don't believe we had any specific language directing them to do that. All right. If there are no further questions, Mr. Marks.
Continuing on page 3, we start having some differences here, in committee structure, and basically page 3 is what makes up the Jobs and Economic Opportunity Committee in the House. It's split between the Health and Human Services Committee in the Senate and the Agriculture and Environment and Economic Development Committee in the Senate. So this page is split into two parts here. The upper part would be the programs that are from the Department of Human Services here. Mr. Mossman has already covered some of these, but I want to cover the ones he did not. The first several items here are some TANF, essentially rearranging for refinancing purposes. The first item just moves spending between fiscal 2006 and 2007. The second item is a refinancing item in 2008 and 2009. And it was pointed out to me before, just before the meeting, these numbers are actually incorrect. They should be 2317, the minus 2317 should be minus 2273, 44,000 less. And the minus 1027 should be minus 983, also 44,000 less. And then the minus 3344 would be minus 3256. There was a $44,000 spending item out of TANF that was done in the House, and that didn't get picked up in the general fund numbers. And then the third line is refinancing of $22,400,000. And if you skip to the revenue item down below, in the middle of the page there, a TANF for working family credit of $5,151,000. The House is refinancing $27,551,000 of TANF within this bill, and those four items accomplish that. And then the one policy item in the House bill, the absent day policy changes, here is split between the MFIP change and the basic sliding fee change, $62,000 in MFIP and $46,000 in basic sliding fee. And as was pointed out earlier, the Senate also has changes in that area. Then skipping down to the Minnesota Food Assistance Program appropriation reduction, this is a reduction of $861,000. And this is a, was a surplus in that program or money in that program that was not being used, and this makes that reduction. A $30,000 appropriation to change the food stamp assets limit to $7,000, and then a $16,000 item that relates to food stamp eligibility. And then there is a TANF spending item that relates to that as well, which will show up in the non-general fund area. Then in the lower part of the page would be the economic development items. Here, the Biobusiness Alliance of Minnesota, the House has $467,000, the Senate $500,000. Both of those are one-time items. The governor's recommendation was $500,000. The House has $150,000 for the Youth Build Program. The House has $200,000 for the Summit Academy Hard Hats Program, OIC Hard Hats Program. Then the biotech partnership, the House has $100,000 here, the Senate has $200,000. $2 million, I'm sorry. Thank you. Then some Senate items here, the Cedar Mills Wastewater Treatment Program, the Senate has $100,000 for an Advocating Change Program, the Senate has $150,000, it's ongoing spending. Worthington Veterans Memorial, the Senate has $50,000 in one-time spending. The Senate has $1,750,000 for the Film and TV Board. The Minnesota Ag Interpretive Center, the Senate has $200,000. And then reestablishing the Boxing Commission, this is done in both the House and Senate bills. The financing is a little bit different. Both bills have a $50,000 general fund appropriation in fiscal 2007 for this. The House is showing zero in 2008 and 2009 because the House moves it to the Special Revenue Fund, but does have a $50,000 appropriation out of the Special Revenue Fund in those years. The Senate continues it out of the General Fund, and then the Special Revenue Fund also has, a slight amount of revenue, and that will show up on the non-general fund page. And Mr. Mossman, do you want to?
Senator Cohen. Mr. Chairman, just a question about the biotech partnership. I think we both were significantly under the governor. Was that just a question of making things fit, or?
Well, we have two other bills, Senator Cohen, actually, that have some genomics biotech partnership money in them as well that are moving. And as we thought about this bill, we felt we should at least have some sort of position for it so that we had the ability to negotiate about that issue in this bill. And so that's why we put that marker in. All right. Mr. Mossman, you want to take over? And maybe I can ask you, Senator Cohen, do you have, you know, speaking to that issue, do you have other bills moving in the Senate on this, or did you feel that $2 million was an appropriate sum for that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, there are no other bills moving in the Senate relative to this. I think that we felt, we like what's happened in Rochester. In fact, last year I was the author of the request and worked pretty hard in Senate to secure the full funding requested by the governor and by the folks at Mayo and the university. I guess part of it on our part this year was certainly a question of how things were proceeding, trying to match that against the request for University of Minnesota at Rochester. And to be fair, just a question of trying to make things fit, which is, I think, on both sides is difficult this year.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But Mr. Mayo has indicated the reason that there is the appropriation for the $2 million and recognize that that's significantly under what the governor requested is that we felt it was important enough to at least try to keep a chunk of it going and looking forward to next year's regular budget when there'll be some greater flexibility to continue the support for it.
Senator Cohen, do you have a sense for what you think an adequate amount for that appropriation is? I mean, do you think $2 million is an adequate amount, or do you think it needs to be more than that?
You mean this year or next year?
In this bill.
Well, I think our feeling was is that $2 million was doable this year. Obviously, we wanted, as both the House and the governor proposed, to make sure we thought the priority was to provide the appropriation for the University of Minnesota in terms of the startup of the Rochester campus. And that struck us as, in the context of this year's budget, a somewhat higher priority.
All right. Okay, well, I appreciate those comments. Okay, Mr. Mossman. Mr. Marks, you're going to do this section.
Mr. Chair, we think it might work out better if I do this page and Mr. Mossman the next page.
Okay.
Continuing on then, we have agriculture and environment split apart here. In the agriculture area, the invasive species staffing, the Senate has $248,000, and then ongoing funding there. That's the same as the governor's recommendation. The House does not have this one. Livestock depredation and crop compensation, House and Senate have $93,000 in the first year, and then an ongoing funding there, same as the governor's recommendation. Renewable energy and bioenergy, the House has at $75,000 ongoing funding. The containment facility operations is in the Senate bill at $190,000 ongoing funding. Second Harvest Milk Program grants is in the Senate bill at $200,000 of ongoing funding. E85 pump installation grants is a one-time item in the Senate bill at $500,000. Bovine tuberculosis through the Animal Health Board is at $587,000 in the House, $685,000 in the Senate. The Senate is the same as the governor's recommendation. And I should mention that when we get to DNR, there's also bovine tuberculosis funding there. Then moving down to the environment area, first item, bovine tuberculosis at $220,000 in the both the Senate and the House bills, same as the governor's recommendation. Invasive species funding here at $261,000 in the House, $550,000 in the Senate, and governor's recommendation was $975,000 for that item. The Corps campgrounds, these are Army Corps of Engineer campgrounds. This item is a little more complicated here. The Senate has $100,000 of general fund money. The Senate also has $400,000 in the Natural Resources Fund. The House has, I believe, it's $200,000 of Natural Resources Fund money here. The governor's recommendation was essentially $1 million. It shows up as $1.4 million, but down below there's an anticipation of $400,000 of revenue in this item as well. So this one runs across the general fund and natural resources fund. The Minnesota Shooting Sports Education Center is in the Senate bill at $100,000. Tower Sudan mine grant, I believe the next two items are essentially a trade-off of $250,000 in the Senate bill. Spending in one and a reduction in the other.
Mr. Chair, members, that's correct.
Can I ask about that? Was there a grant that was previously made to the Tower Mine that we don't need or something?
Mr. Chair, members, my understanding is that the language is in law to provide the grant, and I'm not aware that there was necessarily an intent on the part of Tower Sudan that they didn't or wouldn't, were not going to spend the money. This just converts that appropriation to a different use, not necessarily a use that was not going to occur.
All right. Well, we can go on. Okay, go ahead.
And then the final item under environment spending here is actually it's more complicated than what's shown on the spreadsheet. It's the Clean Water Legacy Initiative. The House is at $10 million, the Senate's at $20 million, the governor's recommendation was $20 million. There are actually several different line item appropriations in this to several different agencies, DNR, PCA, Department of Ag, I believe Water, Water and Soil Resources as well. So there's more detail than what's showing on the spreadsheet here. The final environment item is the Corps campground revenue that I mentioned earlier.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen.
And just on the clean water, was it my understanding that the House had provided some of that additional request from the governor in the bonding bill?
Senator Cohen, There are some initiatives in the bonding bill that deal with clean water issues. I don't know that it was particularly coordinated in that way. I guess I'm not 100% sure myself.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I want to be a little bit careful because it's my understanding in some of the back and forth with the bonding conferees that, so like I said, I want to be a touch careful, that I think they were looking toward this conference committee now to do everything. So I might be mistaken on that, but that's what I heard earlier today. So they've got that $1 billion bill. We've only got a lousy $500 million bill or something. So
hopefully less than that, Senator Cohen. All right, but I think, Senator Cohen, you're correct that if there are things like that going on, we'll have to stay abreast of them. Okay, let's turn the page, and I guess at this point we go to Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair and members, starting at the top of page 5 then is the appropriations in the area of state government. The first line is to the Senate appropriates $37,000 and then $30,000 each year ongoing in order for the legislative bodies and the LCC to provide for legislative training for legislators and regional training forums.
Mr. Chairman, this was an appropriations for all nice to each other. This is a continuation of these workshops that have been started on a bipartisan basis by both House and Senate members the last couple of sessions.
All right. Well, thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, continuing on, the next item on the list is a Senate provision to provide for a reduction or adjustment to the governor's budget related to the interagency agreements that the governor's office has with state agencies. The next item...
Now, what exactly is that, Mr. Mossman? And exactly where is that money coming from?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe the money would be coming from the office, the governor's budget office.
All right. I guess I get it. Go ahead.
Well,
no, I'm sorry. Senator Cohen?
Mr. Chairman, do you?
I understand. Is this $700,000 coming out of the governor's budget then?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we were concerned with, Senator Cascaden, who chairs the state department's division, and her staff spent quite a bit of time taking a look at what's become something pretty innovative on the part of the governor, and that is where other agencies are used, their budgets are used in essence to fund the governor's office. And so we thought, as opposed to going back to those agencies, because that became somewhat complicated, we would take a look at what's existing in other agencies for the purpose of the governor's direct staff, make that reduction in the governor's office, not upset anything else in the process, and then try to have the governor's staff aligned more carefully with gubernatorial staffs over the last number of years.
So I guess just to understand this, Senator Cohen, this has been money that the governor has been using for his staff that would no longer be available to the governor.
Chairman, that's correct. He's been doing it through interagency agreements, and other governors have done that a little bit. In this instance, it's pretty unique as to the extensive nature of the usage of those kinds of agreements.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn was kind enough to remind me that there really isn't anything innovative about this, that Governor Perpich did it all the time. And this is generally something that's been pretty common practice. If we did look into this, and the governor's office as an FTE level is lower than any predecessor in the last 18 years. So,
well,
we felt it was an appropriate use as long as it didn't go above and beyond where it is right now. I think they have that understanding with my committee anyway.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Seifert, appreciate the comment and the help from Representative Kahn.
you know, I should really want to be on the conference committee, too.
I'm
Mr. Chairman, I should put out, I learned under the tutelage of Representative Kahn when I was a member of the House. I served on State Department's...
Is not
I did.
Well, this was in the old days when I served with Senator Representative Kahn when she chaired the division, and was my first experience with appropriations. We took a look at the governor's staff, and certainly his FTEs directly within the governor's budget are lower than other governors. Other governors have utilized these kinds of interagency agreements, but nobody to the extent of Governor Plenty in this administration. And when you take a look at the combination of FTEs in the governor's office, coupled with the number of people in these interagency agreements, it is significantly greater than past administrations.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I also can tell you that other governors that have done this have been criticized in the public as well as by the legislature and have been taken on in regards to whether the amount of spending they're doing is making it appropriate as well.
Mr. Chairman, it sounds like
Senator Cohen.
It's probably not a very popular Senate position, at least insofar as Chairman Seifert is concerned.
Well, we're just learn about each other's bills, Senator Cohen. thank you. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, the next item is affects various state agencies. It eliminates various unclassified provisions or positions in state agencies and limits the number of assistant and deputy commissioners that state agencies can have, and the resulting savings is expected to be the $8 million that you see on the spreadsheet for the Senate position.
Is this the one that you limit it to one assistant commissioner per department? Is that what this one does?
One deputy.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, one deputy.
Okay, thank you. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, the next item, the Senate provides for $1.9 million in fiscal 07 and $1.7 million thereafter to the Office of Enterprise Technology to provide for enhanced security in state computer systems, etc. This is $1 million lower than the governor's recommendation in this area. The next item, the Senate provides $200,000 one time compared to the governor's $325,000 request one time to provide for additional bankruptcy counsel. I believe they want to hire some bankruptcy counsel that's located in New York City for the current loss or bankruptcy case that's going on.
And can I ask again, interrupt about that one? The $200,000 figure, was there, can I ask any particular reason that figure was chosen as opposed to the $325,000 figure? Senator Cohen?
Mr. Chairman, I want to be a little bit careful. This is something Senator Kaskaden worked on, and I don't know if Mr. Lundeen wants to help me, but I think it was the feeling that Duluth could participate in some of the difference.
Okay.
Is that Lundeen, if I stated that correctly?
So the feeling was that the city of Duluth would pick up the other $125,000?
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman, Duluth has a lot at stake, and the request has been made to Duluth to help participate in some of the professional services. They haven't done so the hope was that the difference would be made up by Duluth.
Okay. I mean, this is a serious issue, and I, you know, we're certainly open to learning about the Senate position and what should be done on it. Okay, thank you. If there are no questions on that, go ahead, Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair and members, proceeding then, the following line down, the Senate provides $100,000 annually beginning in fiscal 07 to the Department of Employee Relations for Center for Healthcare Purchasing Improvement. The next line down, the Senate provides appropriates $4 million in the current fiscal year to the Commissioner of Employee Relations to allocate to various state agencies in order to provide for full compensation of state employees related to the shutdown. This would include lost vacation time and other time that was not compensated for. There is a memorandum of understanding that funds approximately 50% of those costs already. The next item on the list is a Senate provision for $250,000 for veterans outreach and to fund the next two items actually are to fund deficits, and the next two items, the following item is an $80,000 provision for also relating to veteran service organizations funding deficit. These are related to last year. You may recall that there was a fee source put into place related to some new license plates, and I believe that those license plates are not yielding the revenue that they were projected to at that time. The next item down is the Senate provides $1.9 million ongoing for the State Soldiers Assistance Program grants. The House has a provision, has a position here also of $2.3 million each year, and the Senate, or the Governor, pardon me, his position was $3 million per year for that proposal. The next item is for the Veterans Affairs Department to set up a one-stop website and internet support services for veterans. The Senate provides $100,000 each year for this. The funding amount in the House position is the same. The governor had requested $200,000 annually for that provision. The next item is also for the Department of Veterans Affairs to provide grants for county veteran service officers, enhancement grants. The governor requested $3 million a year for this proposal. The House has proposed $100,000 a year, and the Senate has proposed $200,000 a year.
And before we leave the veterans items, if I can, Senator Cohen, getting back, and particularly the state soldiers assistance grants, I think it's probably fair to say that the $2.3 million figure we had on the House bill was a figure we sort of fit into our budget. I'm curious, the $1.9 million figure you had, since the governor had recommended $3 million, was there any particular reason for choosing the $1.9 million figure?
You know, Mr. Chairman, I think I'm going to ask for a little bit of help on this. Senator Kiskaden spent a lot of time working with the agencies in this regard. Could I ask Mr. Lundeen maybe just to help me out on this? Because he can talk about the work that Senator Kiskaden did and give you a little bit more detail.
Okay. Mr. Lundeen, if you could come forward, that'd be good. I do think this is a very important area, and we want to make sure we get the number right. Mr. Lundeen, welcome to the conference committee.
Thank you. Kevin Lundeen, Senate Fiscal Analyst. Yes, Senator Kiskaden did spend a lot of time meeting with both the Department of Veterans Affairs, Department of Military Affairs staff, and staff from the educational institutions on trying to come up with some numbers for this program and, you know, at the same time trying to fit it within the dollars that we had available. And so I think one of the reasons that we in the Senate put, you know, the most amount of money that, you know, that we had available into the state soldiers assistance was the feeling that this was an existing program that the department had, and a program where there was need. There had been some cuts in recent years to this area, and I think we felt the most comfortable with putting the most amount of money into this particular area, and that this was where there was a real need, versus some of the other programs that were kind of newer programs coming forward and so forth.
Hey, Mr. Lundeen, was there a particular reason you chose the $1.9 million?
Well, like I said, I mean, within the budget constraints that we were, you know, looking at, and we also wanted to provide some money to the veteran assistance offices on campus. So those were kind of the two priorities that we were looking at. And I think, you know, not being able to give all the money that the governor did, and also seeing what dollars the House had made available for the veteran service initiatives.
All right. Thank you. All right, Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair and members, the final provision then in the state government area is a Senate provision, only a one-time $90,000 item to restore
one time a cut that was made in prior years to the Amateur Sports Commission.
And Mr. Moss, could you continue on this transportation?
Mr. Chair, members, continuing on.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Chair. Just if I'm reading it right, then this would not be ongoing. I understood this was kind of place covering for staff or something. How would that be handled then, ongoing?
Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair and members, my understanding is that this only restores the cut one time, so I would assume that the Amateur Sports Commission would have to make whatever budget adjustments then on an ongoing basis, their budget. Mr. Chair and members, continuing with transportation, then these are items for which only the Senate has some one-time funding recommendations in these areas. The first item is to provide $400,000 to the Department of Public Safety to purchase defibrillators for state patrol vehicles. The next item is to provide $1.5 million one time to the Department of Transportation to provide for the replacement of town road signs. The next item is to provide $380,000 one time in fiscal 07 to the Department of Transportation to provide a grant to Rosa County for a radio tower. The next item provides $500,000 to the Metropolitan Council to conduct a feasibility study for light rail along the I-394 corridor. The next item provides $1.54 million to the Metropolitan Council one time for increased funding for Metro Transit.
All right. Mr. Marks, maybe I can have you take over on the next page.
Mr. Chair, members, then in the public safety area, the first item, a chemical dependency initiative. The Senate has $600,000 here. The House does not fund this one. The governor had recommended $750,000. The second item, Judicial Standards Board, a deficiency for some hearing costs. House, Senate, and Governor all had $172,000. Third item, Public Defense Board, appellate transcripts. The Senate has $60,000 ongoing here. The Governor had recommended $400,000. Department of Public Safety, state disaster match. The House has $284,000 here, and the Governor's recommendation was also $284,000. Department of Public Safety, the Internet Child Pornography Team. House has this at $1 million, the Senate at $1 million, and the Governor's recommendation was also $1 million there. Posting of non-compliant sex offenders, I believe this is on the web. The House has $200,000 for that one. The Senate $125,000. Governor had recommended $200,000. Then missing and unidentified persons, the Senate has $100,000 for this item. The Office of Justice Programs, this is combining a number of smaller appropriations that the Senate has in at $1,952,000, and $1 million of that would be ongoing. Then Minneapolis Police Funding, the Senate has $100,000 in here. The Governor's recommendation had been $2 million.
Senator Cohen.
Chairman, I just want to point out that we actually have, using criminal justice aid, some funding in the Senate tax bill for that purpose.
Oh, okay.
And that's how we matched the governor's request. I think the governor utilized some of what he had recommended by way of an additional budget reserve.
Yes.
Which was a pretty good way to do supplemental budget requests. We didn't have that ability, and so that's how we matched that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, then the next three lines actually go together here, and it's done this way because House and Senate looked at this item a little differently. The salary supplement line is actually the new money going to the Department of Corrections. The bed savings line is the savings that's in the Department of Corrections. If you look at the line that says subtotal correctional institution change, that's in italics. The net for the Department of Corrections for their salary supplement, it would show up on that line. The House has $10,113,000 net, the Senate $13,313,000, and the Governor's recommendation had been $13,313,000 for that item. Then Also in Department of Corrections, mentoring children of inmates, the Senate has $250,000. The governor's recommendation had been $300,000. For Scott County Community Corrections Act entry, the Senate has $196,000 ongoing. That was also the governor's recommendation. A discharge planning for mentally ill, the Senate has $200,000 ongoing for that item. And then an immigration specialist, the Senate has $75,000 that's ongoing for that item. And then under the revenue in this area, under the post board, training reimbursements, we're recognizing lower revenue there. There's less revenue coming into that program. I'm sorry, the Senate's recognizing lower revenue under that one. The governor had a higher number there. And then the Senate has a Hennepin County fine revenue item of $58,000 ongoing there. Then under the final item under that page, other revenue change, this is just accounting for a couple other items in the House bill. The House does the transfer from the tax relief account to the general fund in this bill, so that's the $316,716,000 of revenue coming in out of the tax relief account into the general fund. The House also increases the cash flow account by $1 million and decreases the budget reserve by $1 million. Then, Mr. Chair, I would just mention that the peach-colored page that was handed out, these are the non-general fund items that are in the bills. I would mention that we've referenced a number of these already. I would mention that on the top grouping there that are TANF ones, with the exception of the last item, the $44,000 for a domestic violence information brochure, which I had mentioned earlier, was the other $44,000 of TANF spending. In the House side, this is what gets the TANF money back into the general fund. The Senate makes a minor adjustment in the TANF numbers here, has TANF spending rather than basic sliding fee child care. But the TANF numbers here are largely to accomplish the transfer of $27,551,000 from the TANF account to the general fund through refinancing and so on. I think we've mentioned a number of other items on this page, and if you have specific questions, we can refer to those. We're still doing a little searching through the bills to make sure we have everything here.
Okay, any questions on the orange non-general fund revenue sheet? All right. Well, then if no one has any questions, I think we should move to the side-by-side on the language. And perhaps it's appropriate for me to turn this portion over to the Senate since we are again starting with the education article. I don't know, Mr. Mossman or Mr. Watson?
Mr. Chairman, I think it would be best in the education area if the fiscal staff, Mr. Nauman, would come up and explain that.
All right, that would be perfectly fine. Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman, at your pleasure, I think we'd like to do the early ed stuff first, and in the Senate we have two committees, so I'm going to ask Mr. Albrecht to do the early ed portion, and then I'll move on and do the baby ed, or the K-12 pieces.
All right, Mr. Albrecht, welcome to the conference committee.
Thank you. My name is Dennis Albrecht. I'm the fiscal analyst in the Senate for early childhood.
And I guess what we're looking for, Mr. Albrecht, is if you could just start with page R1A1 and just, you know, I guess that's just really a summary of all the funds, but I guess going to the early childhood appropriations on R2A2 and talking about the Senate position as you walk through each of these, in particular, since we've gone through the money, any particular policy language that you think is of note that we should mention? I think we've already done the numbers, so unless there's something that we haven't touched on in the numbers, I don't know that it's necessary to do the numbers.
Mr. Chair, can I also ask?
Yeah, Representative Solberg.
Can I also ask if we come into one of these that if it's in the governor's rec, since we don't have the governor's rec in this one, if they can identify that, that'd be helpful.
Okay. Mr. Albrecht.
Thank you. Beginning then on page A 2 on line 3.1, that's the provision that makes money available for the basic sliding fee waiting list. Section 2, which begins on page 4, provides for a reimbursement rate increase for child care providers. What it does is it updates the rates to the most recent market survey and then freezes the rates there going forward. That section also provides for half-day rates for child care providers. Section 3 on page 5, line 23, provides a 15% accreditation differential for child care providers who are credentialed or accredited. Section 4 on page 6, line 6, that's the language that corrects the drafting error from last year for developmental screening for schools. Section 5 provides money for the Educating Parents Partnership, which is to disseminate parent education materials to parents of newborns. Section 6 on line 7.1, that increases the Early Childhood Family Education Aid to $120. Section 7 on line 7.9 is the Kindergarten Entrance Assessment, which would provide for assessment of all children by 2010 and also provides for a locally determined intervention to provide additional instruction to children who are determined not yet ready for kindergarten using existing funding. That is a governor's recommendation, but the structure of the program is different than what the governor recommended. Section 8, which begins on line 8.7, is a Minnesota Early Learning Foundation proposal to evaluate a quality rating system for child care. And that is paragraph C of that section. Paragraph D provides funding for a child care Head Start study. Sections 9 and 10 are technical provisions relating to Section 11. Sections 9 and 10 require counting and reporting of contact hours that are used in the distribution of ABE aid, and Section 11 provides for a 3% increase in the ABE aid and a change to the formula for that 3% increase.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, that change on ABE aid, does that have some differential on rural metro? I'm not in education anymore, but I had heard some concerns from people. Is there a breakdown you could provide for us at some point on that, on how that affects rural versus metro?
Mr. Albrecht?
Mr. Chair, we don't have one currently, but we could put that together.
Thank you.
And Mr. Albrecht, as long as we're on the ABE aid, I understand this includes a one-time increase, but then there's an automatic inflator that's added on to it. Is that an automatic inflator for all ABE aid or just this particular category of it?
All of it.
All of it. And is that 3% a year then?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead.
Section 12, beginning on 11.29. Actually, sections 12 through sections 23 are basically the required changes in the early intervention and Part C eligibility provisions to meet federal requirements. So those are governor's recommendations, yes. Sections 24 through 26 which begin on line 20.15 are appropriations. Section 27, which is on line 22.3, that's the adult literacy grants for recent immigrants. That was the governor's recommendation. Section 28, which begins on 22.14, is a study to analyze possible structures and criteria for certification of school readiness curricula for child care providers. Section 29 is a new co-pay schedule for child care assistance. Section 30 is the language to provide for the Legislative Commission to End Poverty in Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, on the parent fee schedule, is there someone who could put something together to see what that is as opposed to current law so we have an idea of what we're changing from what to what? It doesn't have to be the second, but at some point.
Do you have anything like that, Mr. Albrecht, that's already in existence you can make a copy of and provide to us?
No, we don't, Mr. Chair, but we can put that together.
All right, that'd be great. Thank you.
Section 31 is additional appropriations. And Section 32, the repealer at the bottom, on line 26.25, one of those repeals the absent day provisions, and one of them repeals the current law copay schedule for child care assistance.
I'm sorry, what was the last part of that?
One of them repeals the current law for the copays for child care assistance.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you. Let's see. Turning over to the next page, I guess maybe we'll go back to you, Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman, we do indeed. The K-12 portion is broken into several articles, the first of which is the general education article. Generally, this tends to be the more technical of the K-12 pieces, but there's not much in it this year. The first piece is an adjustment to the transition revenue program. This itself is not a revenue item, but it is cross-linked. There's a later cross-reference from the one-time supplemental aid to the first three sections of Article 1, so I will reference that when we get to it. Section 1 of the third article deletes some language in the transition revenue program and adds a cross-reference to a new section, Subdivision 31A, and that is Section 2 of the bill. You'll notice if you compare the deleted language with the new language in Section 2, you'll see that they're identical. And the purpose for that is so that when you get to Section 3, we can deal with a policy issue that the K-12 committee and the Senate felt was important. Under current law, the transition revenue that is counted as pre-kindergarten, the pre-kindergarten revenue that's counted as part of the transition revenue is not required to be spent on pre-kindergarten programs. The Senate K-12 committee felt that that was important, so we made that cross-reference. And in order to accomplish that, we needed to make some adjustments in the revenue program. So that's how those three sections work together. Section 4 of Article 3 is an adjustment to the QCOMP program that allows some districts that were transitioning from the old teacher assistance program, the so-called TAP program, as they transition into the QCOMP program, some additional time to make that transition. This is a revenue item. It creates a little bit of savings, primarily benefits Minneapolis and St. Paul school districts.
Did you say this was a governor's rec?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you.
I didn't say that, but it is.
All right.
The Section 5 is an adjustment to the general education aid. Mainly we're adjusting for that previously mentioned QComp change. Then on Section 6 is the one-time supplemental aid that you discussed when you went through the spreadsheet. This is the $34 per pupil in school district, $34.50 per pupil for every district in the state, $15 per pupil for charter schools. And that's paragraph A. Paragraph B, again, is the cross-reference that I mentioned to you at the beginning. A district that receives the pre-K transition revenue must reserve its one-time supplemental aid under the Senate language for that same purpose. And then a school district that doesn't receive that revenue under paragraph C can spend it for a collection of uses, including paying down statutory operating debt, heating costs, and that language is laid out there. Then under paragraph D, a school district that was required to make the reserve under B can opt out of that reserve with a school board vote.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Chair. In trying to look, it looked like paragraph C is sort of the operative paragraph about where it can be used. Things like heating fuel, you could probably understand to try to at least talk through one. But there's some programmatic changes like all-day kindergarten, reducing class size that look like are ongoing. But I am reading this. This is simply a one-time, and it is allowed to be used for programmatic changes like that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bradley, I think that this would be a question that Senator Stump would want me to respond in the following. With my nonpartisan hat firmly on, I'm going to say the following. That the K-12 committee in the Senate received a lot of testimony about a variety of needs in school districts, and that these were the needs that are identified in this paragraph that sort of fell to the top of the pile, and many school districts identified some of the more ongoing costs, such as all-day kindergarten. And I think the way that the committee was thinking about this was that we're not paying for inflation, and that the existing statutory program for all-day kindergarten, and so those districts that are eligible for that program could certainly use this revenue to, in a sense, bolster that program on a one-time basis, recognizing that this is not a funding year.
Thank you, Mr. Dahman. Go ahead.
So paragraph E just specifies that this is one-time, as you have already identified, and then Section 7 is the appropriation. Mr. Chairman, moving on to Article 4, the Education Excellence. You previously quizzed me about the rulemaking section, and that first in that first section is the rulemaking, and it is in fact an American Indian rulemaking authority for the Department of Education. Section 2, Mr. Chairman, is another change to the alternative compensation. Under current law, the Purpich Center and some of the multi-district integration collaboratives are not eligible for the QComp program that was created by the legislature at the governor's recommendation last year. This language includes them. So this is a governor's recommendation, and there is a slight amount of savings associated with this proposal. Section 3 is forgotten by me. Just a moment, and I will come back to it.
Thank you for your frankness.
Mr. Chairman, Section 6 is the Chinese language program.
Section 4?
Section 4 is the Chinese language program. It's the governor's recommendation, and I believe we had $250,000 for that in the appropriation. Section 5 is the Northwest Online College in the High School program. This is a Senate provision that was authored by Senator Stump. Then Section 6 is appropriations for the Northwest Online
Chinese language, and now it's coming back to me that we had some language in Section 3 for some child-relevant American Sign Language program that, again, was also offered by Senator Stump. And that was the language that I forgot.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seifert,
maybe this is more appropriate for when Senator Stump is here, but the Northwestern Online College, I'm assuming, is somewhere in northwestern Minnesota, but is it part of the U of M Crookston, or who is that? I've served in higher ed. I've never heard of this before.
Nauman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think that would be something that would be more appropriately directed to Senator Stump.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Nauman, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm now in Article 4, the special education article, and this is the first section is a provision.
Before you go on there, just let's see, Article 4, Article 5 is special education, right?
Am I getting my numbers off, Mr. Chairman? I meant Article 5.
Okay. Just tell me quickly, what is the Scholars of Distinction program? I've heard of it, but I don't recall.
Mr. Chairman, this is a program that we programmatically, I'm going to be left instilled at, but I can tell you that we funded it in years past, and I'll make sure that we get some more information for you on that.
Okay. All right, let's go on to Article 5.
Mr. Chairman and members, Section 1 is a provision that the Department of Education, in conjunction with House and Senate staff, worked out that relates to the federal maintenance of effort. Under federal law, if the state does not maintain the same level of special education funding year to year, there is a corresponding reduction in federal funds. Under the existing forecast, we have about 0.05% of a percent error potential. If we are below that, if the forecast comes in with that variant, the state would be forced to lose some federal money. What this provision does is, for the current biennium, allow some of the special education funds to be reallocated to the extent that we go below the forecast, so that we, in a sense, prevent that from occurring.
And Mr. Nauman and committee members, you know, something I was just talking to Mr. Marks about is, I don't know that it will be appropriate to be going off into other bills where there isn't a position on either side, but I know that this language, at least, is in our education policy bill, and I suspect that there is other language we've got in policy bills that match up with some of the Senate language in here. And, you know, as we go forward, they will be able to get the reviser to do that with both the House and Senate bills, so we've got a little bit better sense of if we already have an established position for either the House or the Senate that lines up in a different way with what's in this bill. Representative Seifert.
I'd suggest that may be for bills that pass the floor.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, is there a dollar amount associated with Section 1?
Representative Solberg, no, this is a reallocation of existing appropriation to the extent that the forecast is off. Mr. Chairman, with one caveat to that House language that you referenced, this was a provision that in the Senate bill is drafted as uncodified language for the current biennium. The language in the House bill is a permanent law change. And so I think that to the extent that there's that you choose to bring that language in, that would be something that would need to be discussed.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Section 2 is a special education study that both the Policy Committee in the Senate and the Funding Division felt was important to do some examination in how we currently fund special education. Section 3 is the appropriations. Mr. Chairman and members, moving on to Article 6, this is Facilities, Accounting, and Technology. Article 1 is an adjustment, correction, Section 1 is a change to the allowable revenues that school districts may levy and receive aid for under the Health and Safety Program. The Senate has spent a couple of years doing some examination on the types of health and safety expenses that are allowable under this program. Members may recall that in 2003 we clamped down on those available
options for districts, and the Senate bill proposes adding back testing and calibration activities. This carries both an aid and levy impact. And Mr. Chairman, given that we've just first now mentioned the first levy impact, we do have a spreadsheet that does have the levy impacts in the Senate bill. I have those available to the extent that you want to have those handed out.
Well, I think that that would be useful to have, yes.
And Mr. Chairman, I can go through that if you want at the appropriate time. I think at this point maybe it would be best for me to continue with the...
Let's continue through the rest of this side by side.
Mr. Chairman and members, Section 2 is an adjustment to the debt service equalization appropriation. Section 3 is the emergency Red Lake appropriation adjustment. Section 4...
Representative Seifert, Mr. Chair, just a quick question. I thought, did we have appropriations in a bonding bill last year for a new Red Lake school?
I believe we did, Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, is that... If we did that last year, are they planning on having the school done in time for this September? And if so, why would we put $500,000 to repair a school that will no longer be used?
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think you need to separate that into two pieces. We did indeed have bonding for the Red Lake School District, but this relates to the shooting that occurred in the district last year. The K-12 Conference Committee provided $50,000 of money to deal with things like removed drywall after the FBI came in and pulled out whole pieces, and there were certain security requirements that were put in place as a result of that shooting. And our best estimate at the time that we were wrapping up the K-12 bill last year was about $50,000. The bill ended up being substantially higher, and this deals with that emergency need, which is distinct from the bonding request.
Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, sections 4 and 5, correction, section 4 is a one-time levy for a construction deficit in the Red Wing School District associated with the community ice arena, and this is an item that you would see tracked on the levy sheet. Section 4, you talked about already. This is the WSEKA provision. This is what you had me come up and speak to before. There's both an aid and levy impact on that. So there's the language that accomplishes that. And then an emergency appropriation of $137,000 for the Ricori School District. Again, these are expenditures associated with the shooting that occurred at that district. It also has a tail on it, and we discussed that previously. Mr. Chairman, this is the first occasion, I think the only occasion, where we have some House language that would match up here. I'm going to do my best to represent this. I believe that what we are dealing with is for a residential academy that previously...
Excuse me, if you want, Mr. Nauman, I can have counsel here represent that.
I would be pleased to have that happen,
okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chairman, this was an amendment on the House floor. It allows the owner of a residential academy that received a grant in 1998 to use the proceeds from the sale of the academy after the academy is closed to use it for programs for at-risk children.
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman, Section 7 is the fund transfer section of the Senate bill, and there are about 13 fund transfers for a variety of school districts across the state.
Okay, I don't know. They need to go through each of those individually unless someone has a question about one or another.
If you ever decide to go through the levy sheet, Mr. Chairman, the ones that have a cost are tracked on there.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'm now moving on to the Nutrition and Libraries Article Number 7. The Section 1 makes an adjustment of to the school lunch, increases the school lunch reimbursement from 10 cents to 10.5 cents, and that carries about a $450,000 increase each year, and I think the tail is about $500,000. And as I mentioned before, that is a permanent change. Then the basic library supported in Section 3 is increased by about $500,000 each year. And members will note that these two appropriations also incorporate adjustments for the forecast.
in addition to the policy changes. Then, Mr. Chairman, the state agency's article, section 1, is an adjustment to the department appropriation to reflect the increased $20,000 for rulemaking, and then that language at the bottom under H specifies that that increase is just for a one-time basis, on a one-time basis. And Mr. Chairman and members, Article 4 is the education forecast adjustments. Anything that, any appropriation that displays here just conforms the education appropriations made last year for changes associated with the forecast.
So these are, this is basically the forecast bill as relating to education is in here.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. The one caveat, of course, is those two appropriations that I highlighted, both the libraries and nutrition, which we are not carrying in the forecast article because they also have a policy change in those we referenced earlier.
Okay.
And, Mr. Chairman, I believe that completes the K-12 section of the bill. And I'll mention while I'm still sitting here that we also have a data run that displays the amount of revenue that $34.50 per district would produce in each district and charter school across the state. And to the extent that you're interested in that, we can also have that handed out.
All right. Why not, if you have it available?
Okay.
Maybe what I'll do then is, while that's being handed out, well, did you want to do, I can have Ms. Novak go through the higher education, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, I would be very unhelpful on the higher ed. We have somebody else that can do that.
Okay. Well, why don't we switch over to Ms. Novak then. Ms. Novak, starting on page R60-A10, we'll go through the higher ed information.
Mr. Chairman and members, on R60, Section 1 is just introductory language to the entire House bill. It's not specific to higher ed. Section 2 on page R61 is an appropriation to the Board of Regents for the Rochester campus. It's similar to the Senate's language. Section 3 is an appropriation to the Board of Trustees for veterans assistance. It's $100,000. There's no comparable Senate position. On the Senate side, Section 4 is a change to the definition of eligible institution for the state grant program. Section 5 is the change in the definition of resident student, again, for the state grant program. It adds several categories of eligibility.
Can you tell me what the effect of that is?
Mr. Chairman, some of it is to clarify what is already, as I understand it, being done, and on lines 57.1 to 57.3, it adds as an eligible resident student for the state grant program members of the armed services and their spouses and dependents. And in clause 6 of that section, it also adds people who were dislocated due to a major disaster. And Section 7 clarifies that people who are here in the United States legally as refugees are eligible for grants.
Mr. Chairman? Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Novak, I'd like to go back to the Section 3, the Board of Trustees, $100,000. How does that relate to, on our spreadsheet, the Veterans Assistance Offices on campus? Is that the administration and the Veterans Assistance Office is actually the program?
Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Frederickson, they are related appropriations, but they are made for slightly different purposes, but they both relate to assistance to veterans. I can't explain it any.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, if you'll take a look way ahead on page R131, you'll see that there are, as Ms. Novak says, related appropriations. The both the House and Senate put some money into the Department of Veterans Affairs for higher education assistance to veterans. The Senate having $900,000 and the House has $500,000 here. And those both tie in, I think, to the $100,000 that Ms. Novak was just talking about.
I guess Representative Seifert or others correct me, but if I recall correctly, I think this was the estimated administrative cost that MNSCU was going to incur as part of this program, whereas the some of the other staffing costs on campus was being paid for by a different department in the House appropriation. No?
I don't think it's for administrative costs. It's to actually set up the program and get the assistance going.
Okay, but it's MNSCU. It's cost MNSCU would have in relation to getting the program going on campus.
Mr. Chairman, we had the discussions. I think Senator Kaskaden had the same ones about do we give the money to Veterans Affairs because you got cross jurisdiction between U of M and MNSCU, and do you give money to each of those clusters, or do you just give it to Veterans Affairs and have them administer the program? And we're going to have to. I'm planning on visiting with her and. You know, her staff is still here or not, but you know, to try to get that squared away on what is the best, most efficient way of delivering that service.
Well, we'll sort that out.
Okay.
Thank you for bringing that up. Okay, Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chairman, I believe we're on Section 6 of the Senate on R63.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I just had a quick question.
Excuse me, Representative Seifert.
Ms. Novak, on R63A10, are refugees entitled to state grants under the higher ed program right now? Or is this a new entitlement we're starting?
Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chairman, I believe under the current practices of the state grant program, people who are in the United States legally and are residents of Minnesota are entitled to state grants if they are otherwise eligible.
And Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Watson.
Mr. Albrecht is the staff person for higher education as well as early childhood, and he might want to say more about the Senate.
Mr. Albrecht, can you enlighten us?
I don't have anything more to say about that provision, Mr. Chair.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll have to check into it more. Mr. Albrecht, this doesn't have anything to do with the changes in the self-loan program that the Senate has, does it?
No.
This particular provision does not, Mr. Chair. Those provisions are coming up.
All right. So, Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg and I try to figure out, since the House doesn't have a position on this stuff, is the what's called the DREAM Act in here somewhere and we're missing it, or is that not in this bill?
Senator Cohen informs me it is not in this bill. All right. Ms. Novak, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members, on R63, Senate Section 6, it's an extension of a sunset for directions on how to use surplus appropriations within the higher education committee or division. Section 7 is comparable changes to the definition of eligible institution for the self-loan program, and Section 8 is comparable changes to the definition of resident or similar changes to the definition of resident student for the self-loan program. Actually, it is putting into statute a definition of resident students for the loan program. Section 9, these are all governor's recommendations coming from the Office of Higher Education. It changes the terms and conditions of the self-loan program and puts in a schedule into the statute. Section 10 deals with the repayment of the self-loan program, again, a governor's recommendation. The House Section 28 on R65 does not really line up with the Senate Section 10. This increases the cap on the mineral research scholarship.
Representative Solberg, can you tell us about this?
Mr. Chairman, there is the money that comes from the Iron Range minerals is called the Permanent University Fund, and there was a cap of $25 million that could go into that endowment. And working with the University of Minnesota, they are happy to increase that cap to $50 million, and it's used for research for generally the interest is used for research at both some in Duluth, but most of it in Coleraine has to be restricted to mineral research. And in dealing with this issue, I met with the president of the University of Minnesota, and he's okay with this. He likes research.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, in R66, Section 11 in the Senate and Section 29 of the House, it's the language to establish the Rochester campus of the University of Minnesota. They are essentially identical, except the Senate added some language that the area should avoid unnecessary duplication of higher education offerings. Section 30 in the House and Section 12 in the Senate deal with the mission of the University of Minnesota in Rochester, and they appear to be identical. The Senate has a repealer in Section 13 of some statutory language dealing with current educational offerings in Rochester, and that was inadvertently left out of the House's bill.
All right, thank you. Well, let's next move on to page R67 and the environment articles. I wonder if we could maybe have someone from either the House or the Senate on the environment side come forward. Since we're starting out, Ms. Senator? Okay. You are Mr. Mueller, I assume.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mueller, welcome to the conference committee. Since the article starts with the Senate position, maybe you can start out and then talk about the House position and the comparison.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, on the Senate side, the Senate has some appropriations from the Natural Resources Fund and the Game and Fish Fund, and I'll point those out when I get to those. Starting on page R68, the Senate has the Invasive Species Program. That was a governor's program, not in the House. The next program is in both the House and the Senate. It's the Livestock Depredation from Crop Damage, and that was also a governor's initiative. The next program is in the Senate for the Biological Control for the Facility Operations. That was also a governor's initiative. The next one in the Senate side is the $200,000 grant to Second Harvest Food Shelves. This is a addition to an appropriation we had last year that went for the same purpose. I believe it was $150,000 we appropriated in last year's bill. This would piggyback on top of that. The next one on page R69 is for E85 pump grants. This again is in addition to an appropriation from last year. I believe we appropriated the same amount last year, one-time appropriation, and this is to help subsidize E85 pumps at service stations around the state. And there's also some additional language down on line 63.4, $75,000 of the $500,000 would be for a program to help the promotion of these pumps. On the House side, the House picked up a portion of one of the governor's initiatives that the Senate did not, in the Department of Ag for renewable energy programs. The next program is in the Board of Animal Health. This again is dealing with bovine tuberculosis. It is the Senate's carrying a little bit more money than the House, and this was also a governor's initiative. On to the next page, R70, we start with the DNR. Again, the first program here is bovine tuberculosis. This was a governor's initiative that is carried in both the House and the Senate. The next program, the Senate is carrying a little higher number than the House, but lower than what the governor has proposed for invasive species. The Senate has some additional language detailing how the money should be spent. We carried this over from the governor's initiative, and the House just puts it all in one line item. The next program on page R71 is a Senate initiative for the Minnesota Shooting Sports Education Center for $100,000. The next program is on line 64.23. This comes out of the Natural Resources Fund. $65,000 to help with marking signs and other maps for canoe routes. The next program on line 64.32, this again deals with the bovine tuberculosis issue. This is a Senate-only provision. There's $400,000 from the Game and Fish Fund to help put up deterrent barriers and things like that around cattle herds so that so the wild deer do not intermingle with domestic cattle. The next section was sort of a late governor's supplemental initiative dealing with the Army Corps of Engineer campsites. There was sort of a late arising issue of the Corps of Engineer turning over some their campsite land to the state, and we're still in discussions a little bit with the DNR about how much money is really necessary for this and the fees, and there's still some issues that probably need to talk with the DNR about this issue. The Senate appropriates $100,000 from the general fund and $400,000 from the State Parks Account and Natural Resources Fund. On the House side, they do their appropriation from the Natural Resources Fund. On to the next page. The House has $550,000 for the LCMR operations. This was sort of a reappropriation of money that was vetoed last year and sort of tied to the ongoing legislation about reorganizing the LCMR. The Senate is carrying this appropriation in their LCMR reorganization bill, along with some other LCMR appropriations. So as those bills progress, we'll have to tie that out on that. I guess on the House side, there's some language capping the amount of money that may be paid out to farmers for loss of livestock. That's not on the Senate side. That is the Section 20 and 21. I'm going down to some similar language on bottom of page R73 dealing with bovine tuberculosis and giving some that's just some language tying out to the program, the new initiatives. On page R74, the Senate has some language dealing with increased fees for a horse trail pass. This is tied to a statutory appropriation of $200,000 that goes along with the increased revenue that's generated by that language. The Senate also is carrying some language on the page, on page R74, dealing with this one deals with vehicles and parks. And I believe that Mr. Reynolds may want to correct me, but the House, I think, is carrying some of this language in another bill.
Mr. Chairman, members,
Mr. Reynolds,
fiscal analyst with the House, that is correct, but the bill has not passed the floor.
Mr. Chairman, similar for Section 8, dealing with towed vehicles, allows the parks to give a temporary permit at no cost for vehicles that are being towed behind campers. Section 9 is a sort of a temporary permit for parking at Tower Sudan Mine. And Section 10 is a lowering of daily park permit fees and a new fee for motorcycle park permits.
And basically, these new park fees and permits all sort of cancel out so that they're revenue neutral for the most part. Mr. Chairman, going on to page R76, section 11 on the Senate side, this deals with a canoe route, adding the Sauk River to the state canoe routes. Section 12 deals with the horse trail pass. Section 13 ties back to the bovine tuberculosis programs. And I believe that is it. Section 14 is the reallocation of the existing previous appropriation for the Tower Sudan mine and reallocating that to the International Wolf Center. And that is it for Article 11.
All right. Let's see. I think we've both got a fair amount of language underneath the clean water area. Mr. Reinholds, maybe give Mr. Mueller a break. Can you take us through the clean water section?
Mr. Chairman, members, and I'll begin on page R81, Article 12 on the Senate side, Section 18 on the House side. Really, both of these are very similar in the projects. The differences comes in the amount of the funding. The Senate version has $20 million worth of general fund money. The House has $10 million worth of general fund money. So I'll just go through some of the projects. Would be moving to R82 in the Pollution Control Agency. Both the House and the Senate have the same programs, statewide water assessment, 74.3. And then moving down to the next one would be the development of TMDLs. And House-Senate, same, just like I said, different dollar amounts. In the PFA, this is a section where only the Senate has dollars of $4,310,000 for those three programs, the phosphorus reduction grants, on 7422, the small community water grants, and on 7424, the wastewater and TMDL grants. Moving on to 83, that's the Ag Department. Senate total is $2.6 million, $1.5 million over in the House version. Programs are the same on the agricultural best management practices. You see the difference, 1.4 in the Senate, 1 million in the House. Technical assistance is 800 in the Senate, 300 in the House. Research is 400 in the Senate, 200 in the House. On R84 is a Bowser, Board of Water and Soil Resources. Total in the Senate is 5.93, in the House 3.4 million. The programs are the same programs, but the difference, once again, is just in dollars. 76.5 is the non-point cost share, $1.5 million in the Senate, $875,000 in the House. In the non-point engineering assistance activities, that's 76.10, $2 million in the Senate, $1.575 million in the House. Next one is on 76, 12, and 13 is the reporting and evaluation portion, $200,000 in the Senate, $200,000 in the House. And on 76, 14, and 15, grants for ISTS systems set to county, $730,000 in the Senate, $250,000 in the House. And then grants for non-point source protection to lakes and rivers, $1.5 million in the Senate, $500,000 in the House. On the next page, R85 DNR, total in the Senate, $2,130,000, in the House, $480,000. In the Senate, the purposes are the statewide assessment of water surfaces at $280,000, and it's also $280,000 in the House version. Acquiring of riparian land is $1,000,000 in the Senate and zero in the House version. In the forest, stewardship planning and implementation is at $850,000 in the Senate and $200,000 in the House. That would be the clean water portions of the two bills.
Okay, thank you. Well, let's move on to the economic development section if there are no questions on the clean water section. And then we're going to have the individuals from both bodies that work on that area come forward. All right. Well, I have Carol Baker and Ron Soderberg. Let's maybe, Mr. Soderberg, we're going to start with you going through the side-by-side.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'll be starting on page R86. On the left-hand column of the Senate, it shows the respective totals by fund, the summary by fund, going down into the agencies. The first appropriation of the Senate is the Biobusiness Alliance of Minnesota appropriation. The governor recommended $500,000. The Senate's at $500,000. The House is at $467,000. The Senate also has language under the rider that requires an annual report that the House does not have. Going on to page A13 is the Youth Build Program appropriation, $150,000, $75,000 in the tail. That's a House position. The Summit Academy OIC for the 100 Hard Hats program is a one-time appropriation in the House for $200,000. The biotech partnership, I think this was discussed linked earlier, that shows the dollar amounts, $2 million for the Senate. The House is at $100,000. The other appropriations total, and the House appropriations for all three bills would be $2,780,000. That would be Representative Humphrey's bill and Representative Bradley's bill. The next one is the advocating change for together appropriation of $150,000. And I believe the next one is the wastewater treatment appropriation for Cedar Mills of $100,000 to set a position. Pilot workforce a program at the Central Initiative that serves the Fergus Falls area. This is out of the Workforce Development Fund of $250,000. The Summer Youth Program is $1,920,000 in both fiscal years, 2006-07. That's out of the Workforce Development Fund, and of that amount, there is a carve-out of $250,000 in each year for the Learn to Earn Summer Youth Program. Another Senate position is the Veterans Memorial out of Worthington for $50,000 one time. The Workforce Partnership, this is the Foreign Trade Health and Professionals pilot project, licensing of those individuals. It's a Workforce Development appropriation for $450,000 one time. That bill, that appropriation is in Representative Gunther's bill that's on the House floor at a similar amount. Going on to the Department of Commerce on page 91, this is appropriation out of the Petro Fund to MnDOT for the cleanup of their sites, some contaminated sites of $450,000 each year. I believe that appropriation was actually should be $478,000 the first year and $478,000 the second year. There was a change item related to that. The House has that appropriation in Representative Guthrie's bill as well on the floor. The Housing Finance is a special revenue fund out of the Real Estate Education Research and Recovery Fund, $300,000. And that is for a mortgage for foreclosure prevention initiative. Under the Department of Human Services, this is out of the Telephone Access Minnesota Special Revenue. It's an account in the Special Revenue Fund of $240,000, and that's ongoing. This is likewise in the House bill at $175,000. That would be the Gunther bill on the floor. And that's ongoing as well. Going on to the Boxing Commission, I think Mr. March told the difference in this one. Both the House and the Senate is $50,000 in 07. That would be out of the general fund. The major difference is in the out years, the House would fund this program, or the Boxing Commission, out of the Special Revenue Fund. At $50,000 a year, the Senate would fund it out of the general fund in the out years. Going to Explore Minnesota, it's $1,750,000 appropriation for the to the Minnesota Film and TV Board. I think most people remember the board called the Minnesota Film Board. I think that it's been being expanded to include television productions as well. And this would fund a film production, the film production cost under a provision that will be discussed by Carol later for the Minnesota Film Production Jobs Program. The next one is the Minnesota Historical Society. This is to the Minnesota Agriculture Interpretive Center in Waseca. Most people probably would recognize this as being Farm America, and that's $200,000 one time. And I think the final one is really just a tails restoration in a Senate bill. If you look down on line 84.14, you'll see that the Center for the Minnesota Employment Center for People Who Are Deaf and Hard of Hearing, last year's bill appropriated $150,000 each year, one time, out of the Workforce Development Fund, and this would add that appropriation to the base, and so it's more of a tails issue than a current planning issue. And I think that's it.
All right. Next, let's go to the transportation article. And I'm sorry. We're not quite done. Go ahead.
To the policy issue.
Oh, the policy, okay.
Mr. Chair, members, to be starting on page R94, section 10, Senate language, film production jobs program. This just amends a program that we already have, adding more detail, much more detail, regarding which production costs are going to be eligible for reimbursement from the appropriation that was discussed a few pages earlier.
Okay.
Section 11 on Senate language R95 allows grant money that's granted out from the contaminated site cleanup and development grant account to be available until spent. Next page. Senate language section 12 codifies the exact language that we put in the session laws last year that requires the commissioner of deed to assist small businesses to access federal money. Section 13 actually drops a fee, drops a $25 monitoring licensing exam fee for licensing exams for professional engineers, architects, land surveyors, landscape architects, and that type.
Excuse me, can I go back to Section 12 of the SBIR grants?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any sense for what sort of size of fees these would be? A lot of these are pretty small companies that are applying for these sorts of things. I guess it was just, I don't know if there was anyone here in the Senate that had any knowledge of that. Maybe I'll just ask about that offline. Mr. Soderberg, do you have some information?
Mr. Chairman, actually, I think the fees are going to be pretty low. It's basically going to be for like a workshop. And if I recall in the testimony, it was going to be
$10?
$75. It's expected to raise about $10,000 the first first fiscal year, and then go up gradually from there. Like, I think the top is in the $40,000 range.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, it corresponds, I believe, to the numbers that you'd see on this peach sheet for the special revenue fund for this provision, access to federal grants, $10,000 in fiscal 07, then it grows to $15,000 and $25,000 in fiscal 09.
I see. Okay. Thank you. All right. Please continue.
Mr. Chair and committee, the rest of the statutory language in this article is enabling language for the Boxing Commission that sets that up again. And there are minor differences between the House and Senate, mostly technical, some a little more substantive, and I don't know what level of detail you want to go in on that right now.
Okay, Representative Solberg.
Maybe you can just point out where the substantive
differences. Yeah, perhaps you can just go through and point out any substantive differences.
Okay. This one's small. Senate Section 15. Let's see. And House Section 41. There's a difference in the members on the Minnesota Boxing Commission language. The House requires at least two members must be women if possible. That's mostly the only substance there. Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Elizabeth Long, House Research. There's also a slight difference just in that the House requires the Commission to have five members, and the Senate requires seven members, and the composition of that membership differs in terms of the requirements.
All right.
In Senate Section 17, and House Section 43, which is on R97, the Senate authorizes the commission to appoint an executive director, and the House authorizes the governor to appoint an executive director.
Okay.
Let's see. R99, Senate Section 23, and House Section 49, there's some differences. The Senate requires background investigations of managers, and the House does not. There's also a language difference just involving reimbursement for the cost of background checks. Let's see. I think the next substantive one is on page R102. And it's a House Section 52.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, House Section 52, Mr. Chair, establishes the fee schedule for the Boxing Commission and sets this down into law, as I believe is required. So it establishes initial fees, and then this also requires all of these fees to be deposited in account in the Special Revenue Fund. And unlike the Senate language, as Mr. Soderberg mentioned earlier, this provides that other than the initial startup costs, the commission has to be funded from the proceeds of these fees.
All right.
Just a couple more. On page R103, Senate Section 27 and House Section 54, a slight difference in the requirements of insurance. The Senate requires medical insurance of $100,000 with a $25 deductible. The House doesn't talk about a deductible and requires insurance of at least $100,000 for medical, and then they both require life insurance of $50,000. The House requires life insurance of at least $50,000. And then the next one, page R103, same page. Senate language in Section 29 creates a Boxing Commission account in the Special Revenue Fund and directs that money appropriated to the Boxing Commission goes into that account and is annually appropriated.
All right. Okay, with that, I guess we're done with economic development section. Okay, let's, if there are no questions, let's move on to the transportation section. Maybe we can call up Krista Boyd from the Senate, if she's available, since these are Senate provisions. Ms. Boyd, welcome to the conference committee. If you would walk us through the Senate provisions.
Thanks. Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Krista Boyd, Senate Fiscal Analysis. Okay. We have five general fund appropriations. First, we have $1.5 million going to the Commissioner of Transportation for the Town Road Sign Replacement Program. This will purchase and install new signs and match federal funds. Second, we have also for the Commissioner of Transportation a grant to Roseau County to design and construct a radio tower in Roseau County. Third, to the Metropolitan Council, we have, the Roseau County was $380,000. Metropolitan Council, we have $1.54 million designated for bus transit. Number four, also to the Met Council, we have a $500,000 appropriation for a feasibility study for light rail transit on the I-394 corridor.
Okay, before you get into the next page with all the details, I guess if I can ask first, the radio tower, that is a general fund appropriation?
It is.
Okay, and is that normal that those are funded by the general fund?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't have historical information on funding these towers. I know that the original request was for trunk highway money, and that was determined to be inappropriate, so it was shifted to our general fund budget.
Okay.
But I can get that historical information for you if you need it.
Okay. Yeah, I guess if you could, because I always thought those were funded with trunk highway funds. And then,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Colbert,
if we can also get the reason why it would be inappropriate, because I agree with you. I think traditionally those have been eligible for the trunk highway fund.
Yeah. Yeah, if we could get that.
I will have that information for you.
And then the town road sign, I've heard varying numbers floating around about this. Is the $1.5 million the full request, or is, I guess, where did that number come from?
That's a good question. The federal fund match is $3 million. That's in the federal safety lieu. The need is actually much greater than the 1.5 and the 3 million. So what the program has decided to do for now is to do a 6-county pilot program. And the 1.5 million was determined to be adequate for now for that pilot program.
Okay. Please proceed.
Okay, so we're on the light rail transit feasibility study. And I don't know if you want me to go through all the details of...
No, we can read that.
All right. So then our last item is... That's to the State Patrol for a one-time appropriation purchase of automated external defibrillators for State Patrol vehicles. And that would cover only Greater Minnesota, that appropriation.
Okay, and do the Metro ones already have them? Or?
Well, that's a reduced request. The original request, I believe, was $785,000. We determined that $400,000 is what we would appropriate, and that will cover only Greater Minnesota since the metro area has a shorter response time for emergency calls.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Let's move on to the public safety area. And if we could have the two fiscal staff come forward on that. Welcome to the conference committee. Mr. Carter, maybe I can start with you starting off. And there are a lot of numbers here that we've already gone over in the spreadsheet, so I guess I would just say, you know, highlight the differences in the language in particular.
Mr. Chair, Gary Carter, fiscal analyst. Most of these will be Senate provisions. The first change that we have really is on a page or R109, the Board of Judicial Standards. That's the next page, R110. The emergency management, that's a House position. We already covered that. It's a House-only position for $284,000. Fund the state match for the three disasters. There is no Senate provision.
If I can just stop right and ask, maybe Senator Cohen, is there any particular reason you didn't fund this provision that you know of? The $284,000 on page R110 for emergency management?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure. I think it was felt, and maybe Mr. Turner's going to help me out on this, that it was duplicative of what has been there.
Okay. Mr. Turner, anything to add?
Mr. Chairman, Chris Turner, Senate Fiscal Analyst. That provision was originally in the bill, and then it was pulled out. I think that the Senate figured that if the House included it, we would be in business.
All right.
Oh, I forgot.
Okay. Let's see. Well, Mr. Carter, I could have moved forward, but actually, as I look here, it looks like a lot of these are Senate provisions. Maybe I should go to Mr. Turner, if you'd be willing to go through the, if you'd be willing to carry forward from here on page R110, since most of these are Senate provisions.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Ken Backus. I'm the counsel for the Senate's Crime Prevention Committee. If it's okay with the chair, I thought what we would do is I could explain the provisions that are either not directly related money or kind of policy slash money, and then Mr. Turner could pick up with the other provisions, if that's okay.
That'd be fine.
Okay. The first provision I would mention then is on R111. It's a rider, and it requires the superintendent of the BCA to consult with law enforcement groups and then to develop a missing adults model policy and to provide training to law enforcement on that policy and then to report to the legislature. That's a Senate-only provision, and there's no appropriation for that. The next rider I'd like to point out is on page R117. It requires the post board to conduct a training audit to determine what training is currently being offered to law enforcement, what new training is necessary, and how that should be implemented. And again, there's no appropriation for that. Continuing then, on page R118, there are sections 9 to 13. These address human trafficking. Sections 9 and 10 require the Department of Public Safety to analyze the data that it's currently collecting on human trafficking and then to develop a plan to address and prevent human trafficking. The plan requires them to identify ways to train law enforcement and social service entities regarding trafficking, ways to increase public awareness of trafficking, and then procedures on protecting the rights of trafficking victims. Section 11 requires the DPS to review existing services and facilities to meet the needs of trafficking victims and then to recommend a plan to coordinate those services. Section 12 creates a human trafficking task force to advise the Commissioner of Public Safety on his statutory duties regarding trafficking.
Yeah.
These sections are accompanied by a $75,000 appropriation earlier in the article, but, you know, I just want to explain the policy provisions. Section 13 then creates a toll-free hotline to screen trafficking victims and to provide appropriate referrals to attorneys and victim service representatives, and that's funded by a $35,000 appropriation earlier in the article. Finally then, sections 14, 15, and 16 amend provisions addressing the criminal fine disposition structure for Hennepin County. Section 14, currently the fines go to the local municipality for offenses committed within it, unless the county attorney prosecuted the case, in which case 100% would go to the county general funds. Under that section, the Senate would change that so that 80% would go to the municipality and 20% to the state general fund, unless the county attorney prosecuted, in which case 100% would go to the state general fund. Section 15 eliminates fees charged to governmental units for cases prosecuted in the Hennepin County District Court, and then Section 16 repeals an obsolete section. The Senate's tracking these sections at $58,000 in revenue. However, I know that there's an issue with the effective date as to whether Hennepin County can begin complying with it as of July 1st because of a computer issue.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members. Every other provision is directly tied to money in this article, and it was covered by Mr. Marks earlier, with one exception, and that would be we have a line, Office of Justice Programs. It's 10 different initiatives in the Senate for which the House has no companion. And would you like me to just run down those very quickly?
Why don't you?
Okay.
Yep.
The first one is $800,000 for expanded activities of the gang strike force and narcotics task forces. And that is an ongoing appropriation. And the only other ongoing appropriation is $200,000 for the youth intervention program. And we have 8 one-time appropriations, $98,000 for a grant to Ramsey County for the implementation of a safe harbor for sexually exploited youth, $75,000 for a human trafficking task force and plan, $60,000 for legal advocacy for human trafficking victims, $35,000 for a toll-free hotline for human trafficking victims, $150,000 for the crime intervention program, $180,000 for a grant to the City of Minneapolis for the expansion of its security collaborative, $100,000 to a grant to the City of Minneapolis for additional peace officers. That was the governor's recommended $2 million for that. And then $177,000 each year for the Financial Crimes Task Force. Those are the Senate initiatives.
All right. Thank you. Does that cover everything in the public safety section? Okay. All right. I guess next we'll move to state government, I think, is next, would be page R125. So then I have the two fiscal staff for that come forward, and others. Well, Mr. Lundeen, it looks like there are more Senate items than House items, at least starting out, so maybe I can have you start out.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name again is Kevin Lundeen, and I'm the Senate Fiscal Analyst. Taking a look on page R126, there's a number of riders there. Under the legislature, there's the two riders that we did talk about this when we went through the appropriations for two different forums. One is for a kind of a legislative forum similar to the Horizons type events that we had in years past. The other is to pay some dues to an international legislators forum that's surrounding states and provinces, and that's a one-time appropriation. Looking at Section 3, this is the interagency agreement cut that was made to the governor's office that was discussed earlier. Section 4 on the next page is the appropriation to the Department of Finance for the Northwest Airlines Bankruptcy Council, and this was the governor's recommendation, but at a higher amount. Taking a look at Section 5 with the Office of Enterprise Technology, this was a governor's recommendation. The governor did recommend almost $1 million more than the Senate has included here. And this was partly in response to a legislative audit report that brought forward some findings and some problems with our security systems. And so this is providing some money to kind of set up a comprehensive security program and take a look at enterprise risk and do some assessments and some ongoing monitoring. And then there is some money in the tails for that that will pay for the ongoing salaries and license agreements and so forth. The next item, Section 6, is with the Office of Administrative Hearings, and this is actually an appropriation out of the Workers' Comp Fund. About 82%, or a large portion of the Office of Administrative Hearings is paid for out of the Workers' Comp Fund, and this is for some move costs. There was a proposal that came forward that the governor didn't recommend, but this was something through the bonding process, about moving the office from Minneapolis over to the Stassen building. There's some space available there, as the Department of Revenue has gotten rid of some of the files and kind of put more stuff online. And so the Office of Administrative Hearings would achieve some savings by moving over there. And we have accounted for, beginning in fiscal year 2009, some of the savings, so there would be a base reduction to the workers' comp appropriation to this department. And I should note that the Department of Administration has some funds available to pay for the renovation of the second floor in the Stassen building. This is some dollars that are available in their facilities repair account. Going to page 128, section 7 is dealing with the Department of Employee Relations. Subdivision 2 is the appropriation for the government shutdown reimbursement of last year. And this $4 million basically represents the amount that was not in the memo of understanding that was written by the Department of Employee Relations. And then Subdivision 3 is, this was an initiative of Senator Cascadian. This is the Center for Healthcare Purchasing Improvement. And there's a $100,000 appropriation to pay for one staff person. And this particular initiative is outlined later in Section 16 of the bill. Moving down to Section 8 is the Department of Veterans Affairs. And these are basically the appropriations that we did discuss when we were going through the spreadsheet. If you take a look on page 130, Subdivision 4, the grants to counties, this is the County Veteran Services, and we've kind of laid out the type of requests that should be made to the department and the things that should be looked upon favorably in those proposals. And I might also point out on page R131 that the Vineland Center and the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans are eligible to apply for some of these grants in fiscal year 2007. And this appropriation continues in the base through fiscal year 2009. And then Subdivision 5 is talking about the Higher Education Veterans Assistance Office. And it actually references Section 13 in the rider, but it should be Section 24 is where the language that lays out all of that, the type of assistance to be provided, the steering committee, the office space provided on campus, and some reporting. And I think I'll stop right there and let Ms. Roberts kind of run through the House Veterans Initiative.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff. I think you've already discussed the differences in the numbers, beginning with the State Soldiers Assistance Fund. The House has $2.3 million versus the Senate $1.9 million. The differences in language, I think, are just a difference in style in the appropriation language. Moving on to R130. For the website development, there's a both the House and the Senate have $100,000 appropriated. I should point out one difference in the language on lines. The difference in the language on lines beginning on line 13.7 to 13.10. The House has language that says prior to encumbering funds from this appropriation, the commissioner must adhere to the provisions of Minnesota Statute Section 16E.03. Those are the Office of Enterprise Technology statutes, and this was a discussion in the State Government Finance Committee. I believe Representative Kahn was concerned about making sure that that office was involved in assisting the Department of Veterans Affairs in this with this appropriation. Again, on the grant to counties, the House has $100,000 versus the Senate $200,000, and the House, I think, pretty much has the original language that was introduced by the governor and requested by the department. It looks like the Senate has some different goals that they've added to this language. And then I think then just finally going on to the higher ed veterans assistance offices, again, there's $500,000 appropriated on the House side versus the $900,000 for the Senate side. I think that's where we ended up.
And then on page R132, there were the two other appropriations that we discussed going through the spreadsheet, making up for some funding shortages due to the Support Our Troops license plate not selling up to the projections. Then the next is the Amateur Sports Commission, and I know we did discuss this a little bit. One of the reasons that the appropriation was cut last time was the agency has come forward with this land lease proposal out in Blaine, and we thought maybe that would be getting going a bit earlier, but it's going to take a little longer to get going, and this was going to kind of help the agency provide some more funding and that for staffing. So this $90,000 is basically going to backfill that, and it's a one-time appropriation. I should mention there is some land lease language in another bill in the Senate, and so that's where that is kind of being dealt with at this point. There was some language last year in the bonding bill and the state government bill that kind of addressed this issue also. Section 10 is just laying out the legislative training forums that we made the $30,000 appropriation to. Section 11, this is the language in the Senate bill and the savings that are being tracked related to the number of deputy commissioners and agencies.
Mr. Chairman,
Ms. Roberts.
For the House provisions on page 133, the first, the expenses of the governor-elect, this was a provision that was, I think, brought forward by Representative Loeffler. It would amount, what the language says is that the Commissioner of Administration must request a transfer from the general fund contingent account of an amount equal to 1.5% of the current budget for the operation of the Office of the Governor. And this is to be used for transition costs for a new governor-elect. The amount is approximately $60,000, which is equivalent to what was spent on previous transition for a new governor. And then the other provision in Section 24 simply moves $1 million from the budget reserve to the cash flow account in the general fund.
Okay, then.
Senator Frederickson.
I'm just curious. Why did you make that transfer of $1 million between the budget reserve and the cash
flow? I was wondering when someone would ask that. Well, what happened is basically the first budget resolution we brought to the floor failed because a few members, including a, shall we say, competitor of mine, didn't like the budget resolution. And when we brought back a new resolution, we couldn't bring back the identical resolution, and so we needed to make a change. And this is what we felt we would make the change in.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for that clarification.
Senator Berglund.
Health and Human Services section that I neglected to ask when we went through that section, and that is in regard to the funding for the needle program. The House did not fund that at the governor's level of request, and the funding is contributing to that.
And Representative Bradley, can you reference that, or should we bring someone forward on why we funded NIDO at a different level than the governor?
Chair, but at one point we did have it in the omnibus bill, but I don't remember what we ended up doing.
Well, perhaps we can get back to you on that otherwise, Senator Berglund, unless you've got the answer, Representative Bradley.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I think I would probably have to return back to you and say, because it was, we did have, and I think it was, if I remember right in our discussions, it was simply a matter of balancing books. And I think we looked at the state operated services from what the department told me, that they felt they had flexibilities as long as it was within that to be able to spend. And in the larger ones, those are some pretty significant changes in numbers. And how accurate is the next estimate? Who knows?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Berglund.
It isn't that you don't believe they need the money then, it's just that you didn't feel you had the money to provide.
No. Okay.
I mean, this is a program that serves
people
with developmental disabilities.
Yeah. And I think that's a correct representation. Plus, as I said, from what I understood from Commissioner and others, that they felt they had some flexibilities in that kind of that cluster of state-operated services. And I think it was sort of somewhat arbitrary.
Ms. Zimmerman, did you have anything to add on this?
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. The number changed.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think it is fully funded to the updated number that we got from the department.
Chairman,
Senator Berglund.
Chairman, I Chairman, I certainly would like to get that updated number from the department if there is one, because they certainly haven't provided us with just an updated number from what the governor's request was.
Is somebody here from the department?
Is there someone from the department here that can speak to this as long as we are on the topic? Ms. Julek, welcome to the conference committee. Can you state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Barb Julek, the Department of Human Services, and I couldn't quite hear the question.
Senator Berlin.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Julek, the question that I had was why the House did not fund the MITO request at the governor's level.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer that Representative Bradley gave me was that there had been an update in the number that the amount of money that was being requested, and we never received any update on a number change for that item. And so I think the question is, has there been a number change, and why did the Senate not receive that?
Mr. Chair, members, there was a number change, and that number change was sent to both the House and the Senate. And I'd have to find out why it wasn't passed along.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglin.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Trulick, I believe there was a number change on the Senate side that was in direct relationship to the governor's mental health request. Since that was funded, then there could be a reduction in the MITO program, but the House has now funded the governor's mental health request.
Mr. Chair, I believe the correction was in reviewing the current law revenues that could be applied against the revenue program, that there was additional revenues that were not part of the original estimate for MITO, but part of current law revenues that could be captured in MITO. Mr. Chairman, the change was based on two revenue items. One was implementation of the full service menu and the waiver, which is assumed in the current forecast. The fiscal note for MITO originally did not look at that revenue as a source, and the correction was to look at that revenue. And I believe the second revenue source was I'd have to check back on what the second one, but I believe both of them were based on what's in current law in adjusting, reanalyzing the MITO budget page against current law available revenues for the MITO program.
So, Senator Berlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Julek, let me just be clear then. So the approximately $1.5 million that is in the House bill is what the department currently feels is the full needed funding for this particular area.
That is correct. And I will check on the revenue sources that were changed and verify the source of that.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Well, what's that? I think we've got some state government items left. Mr. Lundin or Ms. Roberts, who wants to take over?
I guess I'll take over. Taking a look at Section 12, this is language regarding the deputy commissioner numbers.
Excuse me, this is on page 134, is that correct?
134, correct.
Okay.
Turning over to page 135, Section 13, this is the governor's rec for the Office of Enterprise Technology, setting up an information and telecommunications account. This is basically allowing the agency to capture savings that have come about in various technology systems and so forth. It's a voluntary thing for agencies if they want to take part in it. Section 14, this is language again. Even Section 15 dealing with the deputy commissioner, some of the unclassified political appointee positions, and so forth. Then, taking a look at Section 16 on R-137, this is the statutory language that sets up the Center for Healthcare Purchasing and Improvement, just kind of lies out what this particular unit is supposed to do some strategies and approaches for healthcare performance measurement and purchasing. It goes on to talk about the staffing, some studies, some audits, and a report back to the legislature on page 138. Section 17, this is language, again, related to the deputy commissioners and assistant commissioners savings. And that continues on page 139 and on to 140. And then taking a look at section 24, this is the language that deals with the Higher Education Veterans Service Program. On the Senate side, it kind of sets up the steering committee, talks about the type of assistance to be provided, that the campuses should provide office space for the staff, and it talks about reporting back to the legislature, and this section does expire in 2009. I guess I'll let Ms. Roberts touch on the House proposal in that area.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, on page 140 on section 32, the House also has language dealing with the higher education veterans assistance offices. Excuse me, I believe this again is very similar to the original language introduced by the department. The House does not include the steering committee that's in the Senate provision, and also does not have the provision dealing with office space on page 141. And I should note that on the House side, there's also an expiration date for this section, but rather than having a specific date of June 30th, 2009, it says that the section expires at the end of the first fiscal year in which the number of veterans enrolled in Minnesota public institutions of higher education is fewer than 4,000, but no later than June 30th, 2012.
Okay, and section 25, that is just the reduction based to limiting to the one deputy commissioner and getting rid of the assistant commissioners and the political appointees. Then, I guess, moving down to section 57, the Senate did pass this as a separate bill and it's passed off the Senate floor. It was Senate file 2634, and I believe the language on the labor agreements is identical.
And Mr. Chair, I should note that the language is in this bill, and also the separate House bill has passed out of the State Government Finance Committee. I believe that it may be in the Rules Committee.
All right. Roberts.
Moving to page 143, the next difference is on section 59. This is a transfer from the tax relief account of $316.7 million from the tax relief account to the general fund. On section 60 is a transfer of balances in the tobacco use prevention and local public health endowment fund and the medical endowment fund to the general fund. And then finally, the last two provisions are also related to this. Section 62, the last provision, is a repealer of those two to the tobacco endowments. And then the revisor's instruction right above that is to remove any references to those endowments.
Okay. And then on the Senate side, section 26, this repealer is related to the savings for the deputy commissioner, assistant commissioner language that I talked about. And section 27 is the effective date.
Okay. Any questions from anyone on state government? All right, let's get into the Health and Human Services area. Welcome back, Ms. Zimmerman, and I understand that, you know, a lot of this we have already talked about as part of the line-by-line we went through, but if you could go ahead and go through the, well, what is the House side here, and I don't know if there will be any other Senate things that crop up otherwise, but if you can go through the House side and explain anything that wasn't touched on the dollars, I'd appreciate that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Marie Zimmerman, House Fiscal Staff. I believe that all the appropriations are straightforward, and Mr. Marks went through them in the spreadsheet. The only thing that I would point out that wasn't touched on in the spreadsheet is on the first page on R144 on line 14. This relates to the Meeker County Day Training and Habilitation one-time rate increase that we gave. It also requires the Commissioner of Human Services to give a report to the legislature. I think it's by January 15th of next year on the appropriateness of the per diem rates for the DT&H services. And then I believe that the language begins on R-152.
Does anyone have any questions as we go up through these pages up to R-152? Okay, if not, let's go to page R-152.
Mr. Chair, members, Janelle Taylor, House Research. The first policy language section would be section 23 on R-152. This adds a language in the Data Privacy Act referring to the abortion notification data that will be collected with the new reporting requirements established later on. Section 27 makes some changes regarding the handling of absent days for child care providers. It makes some changes as far as how to calculate limits and the reimbursement of those.
Did you have a question, Senator Cohen? Oh, okay. All right. Please continue then.
The next section on R-153, Section 31, establishes new abortion notification data collection and reporting requirements.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Cohen.
So, Mr. Chairman, apparently here a little policy snuck into the bill.
Well, actually, I don't think so, Senator Cohen. The kind of criteria we had for putting our bill together was that it could only be things that related to money. And there was this bill dealing with abortion that came forward in the House that had three provisions in it. One was ending taxpayer funding of abortions in most instances. That certainly deals with money. The second was the abortion notification provisions that have been referenced here, which have a fiscal note of $116,000, so that deals with money. And the third item was a provision talking about a doctor who performs abortions having to have admitting privileges within a hospital that was 20 miles from the abortion clinic. And that clearly was a policy provision, so that was something that was not added on into this bill. But the two other abortion provisions that did have a fiscal impact were put in.
And, Mr. Chairman, I'll bet, at the risk of being a little bit facetious, if we could make this conference committee about a two-minute conference committee, if I moved the entire Senate bill plus this provision, I bet you'd take it.
Well, are you ready to do that, Senator Cohen?
Let me talk to my conferees about that.
We await your motion. I'm sure that that'll be an item of discussion. Okay, let's go on to the next section then.
Mr. Chair, Randy Chen with House Research. The next section is section 33 on page R-156. This section requires that applicants for non-federally funded Minnesota care be verified through the SAVE program. On the next page, top of R-157, there's sort of a clarifying change listing MA and also making a conforming change related to Minnesota Care. Section 34 requires the commissioner to require employees of the state and counties to report to the USCIS any violation of federal immigration law by any applicant for MA, GAMC, or Minnesota Care.
And I think it's important to mention that these provisions, as I recall, gain us an estimated $2.4 million. Is that true, Mr. Chun?
Our fiscal officer says yes, that's the case.
Okay, because I think that's an important thing to point out as we look through this, that there are some significant savings as a result of adopting this language.
Mr. Chair, the next section is section 35. Requires the Commissioner of Human Services to make a domestic violence information brochure available to public assistance recipients. Section 36, page R-158, this provides a rate increase to the geographic Group 3 median rate for nursing facilities in Stern, Sherman, and Benton counties. Then section 37 increases the asset limit for food stamps to $7,000. Section 38 requires the commissioner to treat expenditures made on behalf of a minor child who is part of a two-parent household as expenditures under a separately funded state program, and it also provides that these expenditures do not count for the state's TANF maintenance of effort requirements unless this is needed to avoid a federal penalty. Then Section 39 allows the commissioner to waive the cap on administrative costs for a county or tribe that elects to provide an approved supported employment, unpaid work, or community work experience program.
And the final section on page R160 is the prohibition on the use of state funds for abortion that the chairman mentioned previously.
All right, are there any questions about the Health and Human Services article from anyone? Okay, I think that what we're going to do, members, in consultation with Senator Cohen, is take a recess where each of the House and Senate will have a chance to confer with each other, and Senator Cohen and I can talk a little bit further about our plans for this evening. I think what we'll then do is call a half-hour recess with the plan on being back here at a quarter to five. Is that suitable to you, Senator Cohen?
Yeah, that's fine, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so half-hour recess. They have a room number that I provided to Senator Cohen. I guess I'd ask the House members to meet with me in my office. So, Senator Cohen?
Yeah, Chairman, room 346 is...
Okay, Senate members are in room 346 here in the State Office Building, and we are in recess for 1/2 hour. We'll reconvene the meeting. I talked to Senator Cohen and the other senators. We decided that for approximately the next hour, we would take testimony on some of the items in the bill that we feel we need some further information on. And so I know that Senator Cohen, I think, maybe has an idea on a few people he wants to call up to provide some additional testimony, and so maybe I can recognize Senator Cohen.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I don't have the list. I guess our feeling was when we met over the last half hour plus, we have some items we'd like to have some testimony on that we thought might be of help to all conferees. We think at this hour on a Friday afternoon it's going to be difficult to find some of the people that we'd like to have testify, and that we'd probably not get them on short notice on a weekend like this. But we expect that there are some people who are present. First of all, if Mr. Meyer is here from the DNR...
I don't see him.
We thought we saw him.
He's out in the hall.
Okay.
There he is.
There he is. Oh. Mr. Meyer, we thought we'd have a little bit of testimony from you on the Corps of Engineer issue, just in terms of how the dollars were to be handled and what we should do or not do.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Director of Legislative Affairs of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. As we were pulling together the supplemental budget bills, we became aware of a situation with the Corps of Engineer federal campgrounds at the Mississippi Headwaters. Six campgrounds that are located at Big Sandy, Leech Lake, Gull Lake, Winnebogoshish, Pokegma, and Cross Lakes. We've been working with the Corps to make sure that these campgrounds would stay open. It was their intention that they were going to close them this year for any camping or other activities. These are recreation areas that have water access sites, camping, and in the case of Cross Lake and a couple others, they are large economic boosts to the communities. When working with the Corps and the chairs of the committees, we decided to seek funding. The governor actually recommended $1 million appropriation to keep these campgrounds open. We've been working with the Corps, and they've identified now that they are going to keep some of them open. Let me back up. In March, they identified that they're going to keep several open, close a couple, and provide limited activities at several other ones. Now, I have a letter here. If I don't know if I have enough copies for the committee or not. I was trying to get some copies before.
Representative Solberg.
Page number is on this one.
Okay, do you have a page number that we can reference on the side-by-side?
R-71.
R-71.
Thank you. The current status as of this morning with these campsites, the Corps is saying that they will keep, if you look at this letter here, they're going to provide activities at all of them. Several of them may have no camping available or limited activities, and provide reduced level of services. Some services, such as shower facilities, pump out facilities, will be closed at some sites. Other services will still be available, but at a more rustic level than historically provided. We are in the process of working with the Corps to identify the costs to operate these facilities and to establish a long-term process where we will take over these facilities, either in fee title ownership or in some kind of operational capacity, as many other states throughout the country do with the Corps. The language in both bills is similar. The funding levels are somewhat different. In the Natural Resources account, the State Park account in the Natural Resources Fund currently has a balance of $447,000. The Senate provision identifies $400,000 of that and also appropriates $100,000 from the general fund for us to begin our activities of keeping these facilities in operation and to start the process of working with the Corps to make sure we can maintain these in operational status and also get them into our system within the DNR. The House bill, I believe, has $200,000 general fund out of the natural resources account. As we've been working through these processes and working with the Federal Corps, we've also identified a problem within the parks budget itself, where we have a possibility of a shortfall in the salary budgets the end of 07, before the end of FY07. It is our intention, what we would like to do is work to correct that shortfall, first and foremost, without any additional appropriations, but we would like to have access to some of these dollars should we need them to continue the activities at parks until we can come up with a better, sounder proposal in FY08 through the biennial budget cycle next year.
So, Mr. Meyer, when you talk about accessing some additional dollars, what particularly did you have in mind? I mean, you say it sounds like we don't need as many dollars as we did before. You know, what are you thinking you do need?
Mr. Chair, members, in consulting with the commissioners, Merriam and Holstein, what we would like to try to do is have access to the $400,000 in the natural resources account, first and foremost, to continue the activities at the Federal Corps campgrounds, and then secondly, if we need to use some of them to continue funding the service levels of the parks program, access some of those if we identify shortfalls or costs that we can't cover right now through the next end of this fiscal year.
And Mr. Meyer, what amount of revenue would we get from taking over these campgrounds, say, in the next fiscal year? Any idea?
Mr. Chair, members, we are currently in the process of evaluating that at this point in time. The federal system charges less than what our current campground structure fees allow or what we charge. There's also no requirement for a sticker or any kind of fees to get into those parks as well. It would be our intention upon taking them over that we would require a state park camp or a state park sticker or a daily attendance fee to get into the campground portions. The boat access sites, of course, you would not need a sticker to access or use those during the day. For any kind of overnight activity, you would need a sticker or a permit fee to come into it. So those are all things we're trying to work out right now.
Other questions? Any other questions for Mr. Meyer? So just one other question for me, Mr. Meyer. When you look at these six sites, I mean, how large are they? I mean, how do they compare to a state park? I assume they're much smaller in size than a state park.
Mr. Chair, members, I apologize for not having photos with me right now. I will get you some information as we move forward. They are considered more of a recreation area. These campgrounds are located on some of the premier big water access sites throughout the state, the Gull Lake chain, the Whitefish chain, Lake Winnebogoches is across the road from Lake Winnie, but it has access there. Leech Lake is a huge lake that provides boat access there, and they provide a lot of economic activity for the areas that are associated with them. The area of Leech Lake and Federal Dam, that Representative Solberg knows very closely what I'm talking about. There's a lot of money that comes into that area because of that site. Cross Lake, the city of Cross Lake, is very interested in working with us to try to figure out how to keep that facility open. It does need some substantial work to the infrastructure, the wastewater infrastructure that's there, and we're working with them to try to figure out how to do that as well. So they're more of a state recreation area where people go with their boats. They spend their time on the water during the day, and then they stay overnight in the campgrounds and use the areas around them for enjoyment as well, restaurants and places like that. They do have a lot of natural amenities as well, though.
Representative Solberg.
Well, Mr. Chair, one of the things in the letter that came through was that some of the services would be shut down, such as shower and pump-out facilities. As your goal, as you're working with them, you know, as you go to a campground, I'm familiar with the Pukegama one and the Big Sandy campgrounds. I think you'd have some difficulties in management if you didn't have a pump out and or showers available for those campgrounds. Is your goal then to make sure that at least the normal services of a campground, like being able to go to the bathroom and taking a shower, will be available?
Mr. Meyer. Mr. Chair, Representative Spellberg, yes, and that is, it shows one of the reasons why we need to ask the Cizales to work with the Corps not only this summer to maintain a reasonable level of activity, but it's also our expectation that come next spring, based on some federal government issues, the Corps might not be able to open these facilities up. And without accessing these dollars this session, we won't have the ability to access those dollars in the last quarter of FY07, which would be this time next year to open these facilities up.
Yes, Senator Berglund.
Chairman, I heard you say you don't need as much as you thought you did, but I didn't hear you say how much you need.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, Senator Berglund, I apologize. I referred to the numbers in both bodies. My comments focused basically on the parks account and the natural resources fund. We're still trying to figure out how much this is going to cost us and what the levels of service are going to run us. There's a lot of contracts that the Corps of Engineers holds right now providing services that we're still trying to determine what actual level of service is being provided, what activities are being provided under those contracts, and how we might be able to do things differently utilizing our staff and our system that we have in place. For example, you'll see in the letter, the site on Big Sandy is very close to one of our parks. We may be able to utilize some kind of staffing levels from those parks to be used to help maintain and operate some of those facilities. What we're looking for is being able to get access to the money in the natural resources account, the $400,000, and if there is any general fund money available, such as is in the Senate for the $100,000, we would be able to utilize those revenues as well.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, the supplemental request came, I was just asking Mr. Mostyn, I want to say around April 1st or a little bit later, so any chance in the next couple of days we can find out what's needed then?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, I will do whatever I can to make sure that you have more complete fiscal information on these proposals or this proposal before the next time. Well, if you meet tomorrow, I won't be able to get that. By Monday, I will have more detailed financial information for the committee.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, there's also, my understanding, within the Army Corps of Engineers, a fund already that they've accepted the reservations for, and they were going to use that money to keep it open until July 1st. Is that still within the Army Corps of Engineers plan?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, to the best of my knowledge, there was a meeting late this afternoon that I have not been briefed upon yet, but from what I understand with the Corps, they were going to try to at least provide full service to July 1st and then possibly taper off going to this more rustic type thing. We're trying to make sure that we can work with them not only to have a better understanding of what they're doing, but continue a level of service so people going to these facilities have a reasonable expectation of what to expect. And then also work on this transition as is identified in the language.
Any other questions for Mr. Meyer? All right. Thank you, Mr. Meyer, for your testimony.
Thank you, members.
Senator Cohen, did you have someone else that your side wanted to come forward?
Well, I think I saw former Senator Schwab, who might be able to offer a little bit of testimony as to what was presented in Senator Stump's division in terms of our supplemental aid for the schools.
Okay. Ms. Schwab, welcome to the conference committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Grace Schwab with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I'm referring to the language on page R30, if you want to look there. A lot of the portions under sub C came from bills that went through the Senate Education Division. I especially want to speak to the increase in transportation and heating costs for school districts. To get an idea about how much school districts spend in this, in 2004 we spent about $190 million in this area. As you know, just from your own pocketbook and watching your own costs at home, gas prices have increased substantially now to the $3 mark again, as well as heating costs. Schools, unlike any other entity, whether it be a nursing home, a hospital, a college, only get their money from the legislature or voter-approved referendums, operating referendums. And our ability to react to these huge fluctuations in fuel costs was greatly limited because we really have to have a timely notification of all our staff members. So after the hurricanes, we were really held in the lurch to maintain our commitments to employees and still provide transportation and heat to the children of Minnesota. I'd be happy to answer questions on other specifics.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Paul, when I raised questions before in the language about how this might be used, there were things that I could see you could use without much risk one time. But there are other things that would look to me that, at least if I were advising, I would be suggesting to schools that would be really dangerous. Things like reducing class size, all-day kindergarten, providing kindergarten programs, serving students, and so forth. I'm a little surprised that those kinds of ongoing responsibilities would be the kinds of things that you'd be looking to one-time supplemental aid. Maybe you can enlighten me as to what kind of advice you'd be giving to schools with one-time.
Ms. Schwab.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bradley, you bring a good point together. Kindergarten, all-day kindergarten classes provided by Minnesota schools by choice around the state of Minnesota are done out of our voluntary pool of money. So continuing to support that in tough financial times is difficult. And I think when you first thing we've got to do is we've got to pay the bills, to be honest. We've got to pay the gas bill, we've got to pay the heat bill, and then we can go to other bills to be paid. And I think the Senate wanted to be flexible in their approach. So in case there was any additional money, these other important programs could also be funded. But Senator Stump is much more eloquent on this subject than I am.
Other questions for Ms. Schwab? See, I have a question for you. I saw that there was an amendment added on the Senate floor regarding character development, and I believe that was from a bill that Senator Dill had. Was there a certain amount of this $34.50 that was estimated to be part of that? Do you recall, did they have a particular allocation in that bill, $5, $10, something like that? Ms. Schwab?
Mr. Chairman and members, there was an appropriation of a larger amount, and Senator Dill and Senator Clark were the two senators that brought it forth on the Senate side. And they tried to make it available, and I think by allowing it to be part of the discretionary money, it would be a way to encourage children in schools to try this program around the state of Minnesota. So that was certainly Senator Dill's intent.
All right. Thank you. Seeing no further questions, thank you, Ms. Schwab. Senator Cohen.
There's a provision in the public safety bill. Ms. Susan Meyer would like to offer some testimony on that.
No. I thought it was right here. But I don't see it.
This is in the chart.
Oh, okay. Ms. Maher?
Yes.
Yes, well, welcome to the conference committee.
Thank you.
Senator Cohen, did you have a question for Ms. Maher?
Ms. Meyer had requested the opportunity to present some testimony to the conference committee.
Oh.
We don't have people on, we don't have conferees who chair the public safety judiciary divisions. We're looking for the...
It's on our...
Well, Ms. Meyer, could you go ahead and give us your testimony then, if you know the subject before us?
Sure. And Mr. Chairman, we're looking for the...
R114, is the page?
R114.
-815. Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Ms. Maher, go ahead.
My name is Susie Maher, and I'm here today to share with you the importance of the help that this Victim Intervention Program, Inc. needs and certainly deserves. 8 years ago, my 22-year-old son was murdered in St. Paul. He was kidnapped and taped up, gang-beaten, and raped and stabbed, and then left to bleed to death in his car in St. Paul by a group of people that didn't even know him. He was 22 years old, and they were all within the ages of 21 and 24. There were 8 of them, and it was a devastating circumstance to survive. And the only way I believe that my son, my living son, and I did survive is because of the Victim Intervention Program. It's a very unique program that offers support for homicide, suicide, and accidental death. There isn't anything else in the state of Minnesota, and actually not even nationally, that does the kind of work that this program does and is driven the way it is. The program has 2 paid positions. The request for funding here would help them receive 2 more paid positions. It's a very frugal organization. It's highly driven by volunteer efforts. There are weekly support groups that are free to homicide, suicide, and accidental death survivors. And we meet together and go through our processes together. There's a lot of attended time without this program. There are help through the Ramsey and Hennepin County. Most counties have a victim witness advocacy program that's very, very beneficial, but sometimes there isn't any kind of judicial response, and sometimes it takes a long time for the murders to be solved before there's any assistance offered, and it's just during then the legal process, not before and not after. So this program steps up right away and offers help. There's connected with the homicide departments in both St. Paul and Minneapolis right now. There's an 800 number. It's open statewide. And it's really a huge connection available to families like myself that have to face the unthinkable. And it's a small appropriation, but a huge one to them and a huge need. And there's their whole budget is only $200,000 a year now, and that comes from a bunch of different sources, and some of it is already coming from justice programs, and this would be an additional one to get us through the next 2 years. We're working with MAP, which is a program offered to nonprofits, and they're helping us do strategic planning and putting things together and trying to put, and they're the ones that were instrumental in helping us decide what we need right now to keep the efforts going. And I can't tell you how important the program is. It offers so much support at a time when you're devastated. And it's long-term, and it sees people back to positive parts of community rather than the opposite. A lot of times without this kind of help, folks become perpetrators themselves. And the attitudes and the energies then are entirely non-productive. Work suffers in many ways. We suffer without the kind of support and help that the IPI is the only unique little program that has it. And I just would like all of you to think about that this can abruptly happen. It's very violent, and you can be blindsided by it. And if this program isn't available, what do you do? I didn't know how to help me. I didn't know how to help my son. They stepped forward, and I was met then immediately by people who had survived it themselves and could show me hope. and that hope was beneficial in every way to my son and myself. And I challenge you to think about it. If your son or your mom or your brother or your uncle completes a suicide, is a victim of homicide, or an accidental death, what would you need? This program is hugely beneficial. And it's a little bit, but it has a huge impact.
Ms. Maher, can I ask you, how did you hear about the program after the terrible tragedy went through?
I was contacted within 24 hours by the director of the program because she was contacted by the clergy, the chaplaincy program in the St. Paul Police Department. They have a very strong connection with the homicide department. And so as soon as there's a death notification, they notify her, and within 24 hours, she contacts the families.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Ms. Maher? Senator Cohen.
Chairman, Ms. Maher, thanks for being willing to testify in front of the conference committee. Now, the office is located in St. Paul. Is that correct?
It's currently in the St. Paul Homicide Department and the Minneapolis Homicide Department. And it's an in-kind donation from the departments, and they've started in St. Paul. And after about 7 years there, Minneapolis came forward and requested it for their homicide department as well. And when we testified in front of the Public Safety Committee, the commander of homicide from St. Paul was with us and attested to the fact that it made their jobs easier and better.
So, Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Meyer, is there the opportunity for somebody who is a survivor who lives outside the Twin Cities area to get access to the program?
There's an 800 number, and we do connect that way. There's some problems right now with awareness of it. And with this additional money, we can do a better job of creating awareness within other counties across the state.
Senator Cohen.
So finally, Mr. Chairman, so would it then be the responsibility if with this appropriation for, hypothetically, the Duluth Police Department to get in touch with a survivor and suggest some kind of contact with the program? Would be the first question, and secondly, is there the opportunity for somebody outstate to participate in the support groups, either by video or telephone conference call or something like that?
We have had people participate via telephone and like a conference call with the group meetings, and they'll attend part of the group meetings so they have a face-to-face with the other players, and then do some calling in between to save trips to the city.
Senator Cohen.
And finally, so is there, through the program, is there access then to professional help in terms of psychological help, counseling, whatever, where there are then referrals to the professional?
Mm-hmm. Actually, professionals refer their folks to this program because it is so specialized, and they don't really have the background and appropriate services. And it also, the director of this program trains in many ways police departments and all different kinds of chaplaincy programs, folks that do death notifications in different communities. And the way the death notification is handled is instrumental in how folks start their grieving process. And she's done an amazing job with that.
Well, Ms. Maher, thank you so much for your testimony and coming forward today. And you certainly have my deepest sympathies on the tragedy you've gone through.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm wondering, I saw former Representative Rhodes here, and I'm wondering if the Office of Technology could come forward to talk about some of the identity theft and other technology issues that I know that they have visited me about. Representative Rhodes, welcome back.
Chairman, pleasure to be here. I'm Jim Rhodes, Department of Administration, Office of Enterprise Technology. I'm not a techie, but I can give you a kind of an idea what the reason for the funding is. Security theft amongst our citizens using statewide computer services is not only an extremely serious issue, but one that's going to be dominating us for some time. Years ago, or actually months ago, it could be a kid hacking in, but now it's professional crime anywhere in the world, and we have to protect ourselves. If you recall, the Office of Legislative Auditor had a report out about some discrepancies in our systems that we had to address, and they were correct, and we are addressing them as we speak and have gotten a handle on it. There will probably be some more coming down the pike as more and more people tend to get into our system and more people actually use the system. Today, the people, our citizens, like to use our internet 24/7, 365, as you all do. You can get an airplane reservation at 11 o'clock at night or 4 in the morning, and you can do all kinds of banking over the internet, and they want to use our services as well. And we have to protect that. And what the commissioner would like to do, or the state chief information officer, Paul Khanna, is to start a base, and that's what the funding would do. We would be able to bring a few people on board, but more importantly, get the equipment on board to start the process to upgrade and get our security done. As you know, we do this enterprise-wide, so this is through every state agency. We have agreements with all different departments and doing all kinds of things with them, and that's the long and the short of it is we need to get this up and running, and that's why the governor put in a supplementary budget of about $2.9 million, and the Senate has it funded at $1.9.
And we're searching for that reference. Do you have a page reference by any chance?
I don't have it in front of me. Section 16.
Okay. R-127.
There you go.
Okay.
Thank you.
So the Senate has $1.9 million in it, and your request was how much, Mr. Rhodes?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the governor's request was $2.9 to get it fully operational and up and running as fast as we can. We have to start the baseline of getting the operation going. It's a few people, but it's a lot of equipment as well.
Okay, and what can you do for 1.9?
That's the question of questions. Gopal and I have talked about it, and we can get the thing going, because if you notice in the Senate's language, they are funding it the following year in addition to the base funding, and therefore it will help us get going. The 2.9 would get the job done better, faster, and quicker. 1.9 will get it done a little bit, not quite as fast, but thorough. We have to start a baseline. You can't just say we're going to bring in people and change it overnight. You've got to start a process, and this will get us to build our base for the process.
And was your request, Representative Rhodes, was it for 2.9 one time, or was there an ongoing appropriation too?
I believe it was 2.9 one time. It was before Representative Seifert's committee. It was 2.9, wasn't it? One time.
Actually, I guess I'm looking at the spreadsheet now. Mr. Mark shows me another 1.8 a year after that.
Right, right.
Okay. Right. All right.
And just so everybody knows, the Office of Enterprise Technology is a group that the legislature created last year, and offset off of the Department of Administration to deal with how we're going to deal with the computers and software and everything else for the upcoming years to come. And this is just one segment that we have to do. We don't need to have a security breach, because nobody wants to face the problem if it's publicized that a citizen has had their security breached.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rhodes, the Office of Enterprise Technology also has the ability to build back those the agencies, does it not?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, that would be correct, but in an issue of security, it doesn't quite work that way, because they have to then come up with the money too, so they would then be short on their regular operational processes. So to we talked about this a little bit in committee. It sounds easy to say this is not about websites and things like that that we're going to develop. It's actual security. And to actually go into billing back the departments, now they have to come up with the money, so then therefore they can't do what they have to do to get their other operations going. It's better to have it as a appropriation for this specific purpose.
Mr. Chairman, just in the future, though, wouldn't that security be part of the bill back?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I can't answer that specifically because I'm not informed enough on how the system works. I have all I can do to do my emails. However, I would tell you that I think in this case it is so specific for security and breaches of security that it's probably not going to work as simple as it sounds.
Any other questions for Mr. Rhodes? Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, it's not a question, but we had 2 days of hearings on this in our division, and it is something that stems from last year. We had some issues, and then we had a legislative auditor's report, and this is, I think, a fairly serious issue. Some of you saw a report on television about some of the lack of security. The state auditor or the legislative auditor confirmed that, and I think, you know, this should be a pretty high priority item in terms of what we heard. I think Senator Cascaden concurred in that as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Rhodes.
Thank you.
Metra, is Jane Hardwick here from Human Services? Ms. Hardwick?
Ms. Hardwick, welcome to the conference committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jane Hardwick. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Human Services. I understand you had a question concerning a fiscal note from the department.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Berglund.
Senator Berglund.
Yes. Mr. Chairman and Ms. Hardwick, I had a question regarding the DHS fiscal analysis of the Section 4 prohibition of state funded health care programs for paying for abortion.
Yeah.
Ms. Hardwick.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, the additional analysis that was contained in the fiscal note was some preliminary analysis that the Department of Human Services had done that we did not incorporate into the initial fiscal note. The Department of Finance felt it was important information for the legislature to have available.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Hardwick, the reason I just have some questions about it, I mean, first of all, it's not a small amount of money that we're talking about here. We're talking about, you know, a lot of money. And, you know, each share of, you know, $12 million. Normally, or at least the practice that has been used by the Department of Finance in the past, and I think it's, you know, the example that we could use is the lawsuit on the tobacco impact fees. There's a lawsuit, you know, about it. But the principle is that the money stays in the budget until the lawsuit is finalized, and then a decision is made against the state, then the money will come out in that next quarter.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, while I can't speak to the fiscal noting of the health impact fee, I can say that in this particular case, the department's assumption was that this legislation, once enacted, would go before the courts, and a temporary restraining order would be imposed immediately. Our assumption was based on historical litigation experience with the department. It's a fairly high bar for us to make an assumption around legislation going in, immediately into a temporary restraining order, but we felt that was the appropriate assumption in this particular case.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, in the presence of you, the analysis that I just gave you regarding the tobacco impact fee, which that money still is in the forecast that's coming in regardless of the lawsuit we know is pending, it just seems to me that until the court actually has made a ruling on something, that the principle that would have to be used is that we budget for it. We budget for a change in state law until or unless a change occurs, whether it's a court ruling or federal ruling or something else. And I just don't think that principle has been followed in regard to this item.
Ms. Hardwick.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, in this particular instance, we are not making an assumption about the outcome of the judicial case around this subject, rather an assumption that there would be an immediate injunction at the outset.
Senator Berglund.
Chairman and Ms. Hardwick, either way, you're making an assumption of a court action.
Ms. Hardwick.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, we are making an assumption about the immediate court action based on experience on very similar circumstances past.
Senator Berglund.
In the part with, do we have the same judges on the bench that made that original decision about an injunction?
Ms. Hardwick.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, I do not believe so.
So, Senator Berglund. Would it be a fair assumption for you to decide what a new set of justices would do with an injunction?
Ms. Hardwick.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, it was the department's assumption that this would be the most likely scenario to occur if this legislation were enacted.
Any, Senator Berglund?
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Hardwick, based on what? Do you, like, look in a crystal ball and kind of read the judge's mind?
Ms. Hardwick?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, no, I would suggest that we don't typically use a crystal ball. However, as with all of our fiscal notes, we use our experience and judgment as an agency to project what we anticipate to occur in the event that legislation is adopted.
So,
Senator Berglund.
Chairman Ms. Hardwick, so if you're not right, then you would just be forecasting this increased need in funding?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, that's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think, Senator Berglund, that I'm informed that it was really the Department of Finance that chose to have a lot of the additional discussion in the fiscal note that I think you're referring to. But, all right. Thank you, Ms. Hardwick. I'm wondering if Mr. Meyer could come back. I think he's probably the person to talk about invasive species. Would that be right, Mr. Meyer?
Somewhat.
You know everything. Mr. Meyer, welcome back. I know that we had a few questions about the whole department's position on invasive species, and maybe I can ask... recognize Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I'm wondering if you could shed some light on, and maybe the Senate can would have even more specific information on part of it, but there's underneath the, on R-70, we have appropriation request of $550,000 for invasive species, but then it's very prescribed as to how those dollars would be divided up. And is that a department's recommendation with regard to those divisions?
Mr. Meyer.
Representative Osmond, for the record, Bob Meyer, Legislative Affairs Director, DNR. Representative Osmond, the language you see in the Senate side, beginning at 63.26 through... actually, after species on 6410, is language that comes from the governor's recommendation. So beginning at 6410, after the word species, the language that says this appropriation includes money for the control of curly leaf pondweed in Lake Osakis, that was added by the Senate. And the cost of doing that, Mr. Chair and members, would possibly eat up that whole $550,000.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it possibly the Senate could shed some light as to what the uniqueness is on Lake Osakis, that we would have that type of an appropriation identified or earmarked.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as Ms. Berenike, I thought this was language recommended by the agency. I recall the discussion in Senator Sam's division in terms of these particular appropriations. Was that not also the case in terms of Lake Osakis? It was not.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Meyer,
members know that the appropriation including money for the control of curly leaf pondweed in Lake Osakis was added in the committee. We do have some concerns about the cost and what that would do, and actually the ability to control curly leaf pondweed in that lake.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I just wonder, is Mr. Mueller here? Maybe he could help us out.
Mr. Mueller, if you could come back. Mr. Mueller.
Yes.
Mr. Mueller, do you have any sense for where the curly leaf pondweed Lake Osakis language came from?
Mr. Chairman, members, this language was added to the governor's language in committee.
All right. Representative Osmond?
Well, I'm very concerned with that, that the earmarking of the dollars. I know in our proposal we just was leaving that up to the department. I know the department then identified specific allocations that they would like to see made. But then to have one on there that would potentially threaten the entire appropriation, I think, is problematic.
Thank you. Any other questions or discussions on this issue? All right. Mr. Mueller, Mr. Meyer, thank you.
Thank you very much,
Chair. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Osmond.
Chair, on another item further down on R-71, we have on 64.32 on the Senate side, we have emergency deterrent materials assistance. And this is money that would be taken out of the Game and Fish Fund to, I believe, help with the concern we have with disease. I believe it's the tuberculosis outbreak. And I'm wondering with regard to, I know that we received a letter from the Budget Oversight Committee of the DNR, which is a citizens group that looks at the recommendations from the DNR. And their recommendations is that we not take this out of the Game and Fish Fund. And I'm wondering why that, and we decided that would be that's appropriate, that this, as they pointed out, this originally came from domestic animals. Why would we have the Game and Fish Fund pay for it? And I'm wondering if the department could respond to or give us an idea of their insights on this particular issue, why we should include that.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Osmond, thank you for bringing up that issue. I do have a concern. The department does have a concern about this appropriation, $400,000 from the Game and Fish Fund. It originates from the Senate file bill dealing with bovine tuberculosis, expanding our emergency deterrent materials program to include fencing. Basically, this appropriation would allow for the fencing of hay storage areas in the bovine TB identified zone of the state. It's not that we don't recognize the need for that. It's just the funding, as Representative Osmond said, and our Budget Oversight Committee has raised some drastic concerns about this. Where the money comes from is not appropriate for the program. It is more of an agricultural issue, Department of Ag, possibly. The bovine TB, as identified, came from a Mexican strain. possibly cattle to the deer, and now the deer will transfer back to cattle again. So they're trying to keep the deer and the cattle separate.
And Representative Osmond. Chair, I wanted to bring this so that we could have a little time to get further educated on it, because it really is a serious problem that needs to be addressed, but we seem to be taking the money from the Game and Fish Fund to actually protect or separate the agricultural activities from our natural wildlife, and that seems a little bit difficult for us to be doing, taking the Game and Fish money to separate a problem that really originates in domestic stock.
Mr. Meyer, was this the separation of the deterrent materials, was this a recommendation of the governor?
Mr. Chair, no, it was not.
So, Mr. Meyer, is it the position of the department? Do you think this is necessary?
Mr. Chair, members, the need of it can be in certain areas possible, but in other areas not necessary. It depends on management practices, population estimates, or where the deer herd is. It's not that we're not denying the policy changes in the program. It's just the source of funding that is associated with it that we do have concerns about.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry. Representative Colbert.
Can I ask what areas of the state this is a problem?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Colbert. Where bovine TB has been identified, it's primarily where we have large deer herd populations, but in the hunted, the forested areas, I don't want to use Highway 2 as an example because it's a bad example, but in the northern, eastern, western, northern quarter of the state, possibly, Kitson County, Marshall County, over in that area.
So,
Representative,
the northwest as opposed to northern, is that correct?
More northwest than northeast, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you. All right. I'm sorry, Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, on this point, if we have time, it may be nice for... This was a Senator Scoy provision, and I know he worked a lot with the DNR on this and has some opinions about whether we should be using the Game and Fish Fund for this purpose. A little note that some Game and Fish Fund money is being used for a similar purpose, and granted the Senate is expanding the program a little bit, and which would cost us amount of money, but I don't want to speak for Senator Scoy directly, but he made the point of Scoy directly, but he made the point about what would happen to the Game and Fish Fund if bovine tuberculosis did reach an epidemic proportion out in the deer herd. What would happen to the Game and Fish Fund then if there was significant decrease in the licenses purchased? So he looks at it maybe as more of a one-time short-term cost to prevent a long-term problem in the Game and Fish Fund.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bradley, I think you had a topic you wanted to bring up forward.
Just a couple of items that could be follow-up. One of them I just wanted to confirm. There was some discussion about the radio tower and whether or not that ought to be a trunk highway. Did we leave that as a question to be followed up? Because there's also maybe there was some question about the road signs as well. Was there something to be followed up on that?
I think the road signs are general fund money, but we do, and I think are following up on the tower question. Representative Slobert, to that point.
Mr. Chairman, for the road signs, this testimony was given that it matches some federal funds, but my question is a local township able to have the appropriation of their expenditures of money for road signs? Would they be able to match the federal funds?
I guess I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, I have an awful lot of townships, but most of my townships have put up their own signs.
I recall this issue from a few years ago, Representative Slobert, that there's some sort of matching federal grant that's very generous to this.
I'm going to be able to get the federal funds. I just want to make sure that maybe it's too much for the townships to individually do.
And I don't know if there's someone from staff here that knows about this issue. Margaret Cotterick?
Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, I do believe that there is $3 million of federal money included in the last authorization to be matched at a local level of 20%. So I believe the initial request, I don't have the information with me, was for $600,000 for general fund. That match covers both the township and the state. The townships have been asked to participate as they can. I don't have details as to what that is, but the 20% federal match would be covered by the appropriation in this bill.
Thank you.
Okay.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then on a different subject, I think this would be just kind of a request. In the bill from the Senate, there is a reducing copay proposal. It's a little hard to sort of compare because it just shows you what the new proposals are. And if we could get information that would sort of show the comparisons of current versus proposed, and maybe even some actual dollars, those kinds of things, that would be helpful to be able to analyze a little better. So that would be more of a follow-up request if there's someone here, or maybe Representative Houghton, you're probably familiar with this area, if we could get some information like that, maybe just an updated chart.
Mr. Chairman, it's already been requested. It
has. Okay. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Well, members, I think we're nearing the hour at which we had agreed that we would adjourn for the evening. Unless there's any other burning question that anyone has, Senator Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering about time frame. Now, my understanding is the Senate gets the gavel and we're not going to meet tomorrow or Sunday.
Well, let me talk to Senator Cohen or recognize Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Seifert and other conferees, when Representative Knobloch and I talked, our concern is that 6 o'clock Friday evening, we have other testimony we'd like to have, and our fear is that we're not going to find people at this hour to come and testify tomorrow. Obviously, they won't be in their offices. And so we might find a couple of people, but not the numbers we'd like to have. We also talked about the ability to go through language that might be the same in the bill. And at least our staff indicated there's a little bit, but not a significant amount. So we think to get better tomorrow, you know, we might be here for an hour plus, and not have the opportunity to get much more accomplished than that. So we thought it'd be easier to have some time Monday to organize the Monday meeting, have all the testimony we'd like to have from any member of the conference committee, go through all of that, have some of the language better organized, and to be honest, to see where we are possibly in terms of establishing a target for the conference committee by the end of the day Monday.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, we're looking at whatever magic day that leadership said, this Scandinavian holiday or whatever. You know, that means we should be wrapping up by Tuesday evening, so is that a little too aggressive?
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen.
I personally am not Scandinavian. So
neither am I.
Mr. Chairman, I want to interrupt if I can. Keep in mind,
Representative Slovak, to this point,
Setanmai is Norwegian only, not Scandinavian, and I have to be Swedish, and I will not celebrate the independence of Norway from Sweden.
And Mr. Cohen, Chairman, and Mr. Solberg, that's a point well taken, and further reinforces my comment. So that might have been a concern of the speaker. It's kind of looking at our conferees. I'm not sure it's a concern of our conferees. I know there's some intent to get out of here early. At this point, you know, if we could have adjourned middle of April, great. But I'm not sure. Pushing to adjourn 36 hours earlier than would otherwise be the case and do a sloppy job in the process is wise. Certainly I would hope that we'd be able to work in a fairly expeditious way. I think we can. We need to have a target established. That's not been the case. I think I indicated that we had a good telephone conversation with the governor late this morning. Senator Johnson is going to talk to the governor again latter part of the afternoon. I obviously haven't heard anything about what might have taken place with that call. But I think we're going to be prepared to do a lot of work on Monday. We'll have things organized so we're not going to do things hit and miss.
Senator Berglund.
Chairman, I'm hoping that before we get to sit in the mine, we've got a target. It would be kind of hard to finish this conference meeting without a target. If you don't get one before the day we're supposed to be adjourning, it'd be pretty hard to finish our work.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Seifert,
we certainly, you know, the way we ran our conference committee last year, Senator Cascade and I adopted the items we agreed to, and we went to leadership and said we're done, and we brought it back to the floor, and we voted on it. So I don't know that we need permission from other people to have some sort of target. My understanding, the bonding committee is working with on their fifth offer right now without a target.
Representative Osmond.
And I'd like to echo that. Last year, the conference committee that kept the state parks open, as well as funding for, I believe, six different departments and agencies and 6,000 people, did it on their own without a target. So I believe we have the will. We can get this job done.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nadluck and I have talked about this. And one difficulty we have with this particular conference committee is obviously the kind of money we have available to spend is going to be, to some extent, dependent on what agreement is reached relative to a tax target. And, if, you know, we can certainly work through, I think, language, arguably some money, and we'll have a pretty good idea where we might end up. But obviously, if we run headlong into the tax committee, it becomes a little bit difficult. And I know Representative Osmond, you and Senator Sams and the others did a very good job in that regard last year, but I think the dollar differences were relatively small, so it was a little bit easier to do that and get your bill taken care of.
Well, I would suggest to me that the surest way to have progress made in the tax committee area would be for us to show that we have some interest in taking over the tax committee and doing it here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I spent my first term in the Senate on the Tax Committee, never in the House, but I'd be willing to take a crack at it again.
Well, we'll see. Representative Seifert.
Is there an intent to have offers on Monday, Senator Cohen, or Representative Knobloch?
Senator Cohen.
Mr.
I'm just a junior member who has been on, you know, only about a dozen conference committees, so I haven't been on as many as everybody else here, but...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seifert, I'm not sure that would happen Monday, but certainly I would expect to be able to do something on Tuesday.
Well, I think that we should have staff work together between now and Monday to identify the identical and near-identical language, make recommendations on how we can resolve that so that we can come in and also have any member who has someone that they want to have testify on Monday forward those recommendations so that we can have as many people who we need to testify on Monday here and available to testify, and that we can hopefully get through as much of the language as possible on Monday.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I would just reinforce that to have members either talk probably either to Kevin or to Angie about issues. There were a couple of other things that just occurred to me as we were sitting here that we hadn't talked about upstairs. So that we can make sure we have the witnesses available and can listen to people and get a clear sense of each other's positions as well as general questions we have. So we'll have a meeting that will go quite smoothly Monday, get a lot of work accomplished, and then hopefully Tuesday we'll have a lot of time to work on the numbers. And Representative Nadluck and I talked about time, and apparently... Mr. Chairman, you have a Ways and Means Committee scheduled after session.
I do, on Monday.
And I think the House goes into session an hour later than the Senate. So you're in session, I think, at noon?
11.
Actually, I guess we are in session at 11.
Okay, well, maybe that might get us going a little bit quicker. We were thinking it might be 6-ish before we'd meet, but we'll be in touch on Monday. And to the extent that the sessions don't take a long time, that your meeting is then done in a reasonable period of time, we'll try to meet shortly thereafter.
And I don't believe we've got any major controversial bills to do in Ways and Means. We just have some other bills we've got to get done.
Famous last words.
Famous last words. Hopefully not. All right. Any other questions for members? Seeing none, we are adjourned to the call of the Senate.
Do we keep things here if you take care of them?
Keep it here if you don't want it.